Good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, August 14, 2017. We broadcast live every Monday from 8-9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening over another network or you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 515-604-9386. And our participant code is 416303. If your cell provider blocks or charges for the call, you can call our backup number of 781-838-3728. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side. Okay, before we go to the scripture reading, did that music come through there, Jan, and am I coming through clear at this point?
You're coming through, but the music did not.
Did not come through. I wonder why that was. All right, well, we're going to have a 4-minute blank spot there, I guess, because we hit the recording. All right. Well, at the Jan, when you talk to these people tomorrow, see if you can get me. I'll try to find out, or you can try to find out if you can't get me. You know what's up with the music too? I hit the broadcast, and it should have broadcasted it. But
I don't see Jan in here.
Jan's not here?
No.
Okay. All right. He's probably having problems. I know he's got a temporary service. So let me see. So it's only you and me at this point as far as hosts is concerned.
Right.
Okay. All right. So let's see where we go tonight. Okay, tonight's scripture reading is going to be Matthew chapter 14, verses 15. I think we'll read through 36. 15 through 36. Matthew 14, 15 through 36. And when it was evening, his disciples came to him, saying, "This is a desert place, and the time is now past. Send the multitude away, that they may go into the villages and buy themselves victuals." But Jesus said unto them, "They need not depart, give ye them to eat." And they say unto him, "We have here but 5 loaves and 2 fishes. He said, "Bring them hither to me." And he commanded the multitude to sit down on the grass, and took the 5 loaves and the 2 fishes, and looking up into heaven, he blessed and brake, and gave the loaves to his disciples, and the disciples to the multitude. And they did all eat, and were filled. And they took up of the fragments that remained 12 baskets full. And they that had eaten were about 5,000 men, besides women and children. And straightway Jesus constrained his disciples to get into a ship, to go before him onto the other side, while he sent the multitudes away. And when he had sent the multitudes away, he went up into a mountain apart to pray. And when the evening was come, he was there alone. But the ship was now in the midst of the sea, tossed with waves, for the wind was contrary. And in the 4th watch of the night, Jesus went unto them, walking onto the sea. And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, "It is a spirit," and they cried out for fear. But straightway Jesus spake unto them, saying, "Be of good cheer, it is I, be not afraid." And Peter answered him and said, "Lord, if it be thou, bid me come unto thee on the water." And he said, "Come." And when Peter was come down out of the ship, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. But when he saw the wind boisterous, he was afraid and began to sink. He cried, saying, "Lord, save me." And immediately Jesus stretched forth his hand and caught him and said unto him, "O thou of little faith, wherefore didst thou doubt?" And when they were come into the ship, the wind ceased. Then they that were in the ship came and worshipped him, saying, "Of a truth, thou art the Son of God." And when they were gone over to the when they had gone over, they came unto the land of Gennesareth. And when the men of that place had knowledge of him, they sent out unto all the country round about, and brought unto him all that were diseased, and brought him that besought him that they might only that he. And besought him that they might only touch the hem of his garment, and as many as touched were made perfectly whole. Okay, that was Matthew chapter 14, verses 15 through 36. Okay, hang on, let me just get this phone. This may be Jan calling me. I'm not sure. Hang on a second. All right, I'm sorry. Okay, Jan still isn't here. I don't see him, so I don't know if we have any questions. Robert, do we have any announcements that you know of? Do you have an announcement?
Well, I've got some things to say on the update for P3s.
Okay. And before you get started, I just want to let everyone know the Q&A is open, so if anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6, and I think it'll ask you to hit 1, but star 6 to get into the queue. Go ahead, Robert.
Last Thursday, court became a travesty of justice, much worse than what the norm has been. Eric Parker was on the stand to testify, and he was asked, "Where were you looking?" And he said, "In front of me and up. What did you see?" "I saw snipers on the hilltop with rifles trained on us." Boom, the court blew up. Two officers drug Parker off the stand. The judge halted the court. She had a written question from the jury, so she picked that up, read it, and evidently it just blew her brain away, so she threw it down on the desk and she stomped out of the courthouse. Court ended for the weekend. It just started again today. All morning was hassling. The prosecution was asking for sanctions against the defense.
Hey, let me, before you go any further, Robert, did anyone notice what the reaction of the jury was during that time period when...
Yes. When all that blew up, their mouths dropped open and they eyes big and just in disbelief. They couldn't believe what they were seeing.
So it's this jury might be able to see through all the BS, I presume, possibly.
Well, yes, and it continues. I mean, it's like there's no way they can't see it. I mean, the jury asked when they were going to see the evidence from defense. Judge told them, "They have no evidence. You're going to have to rely on testimony." And let's see, at the beginning of the defense part of the trial, she decided that anybody testifying for the defense was going to have to testify to her first before the jury heard it, and she would determine whether it was relevant or not before the jury was to hear it. Well, she denied testimony from every one of the witnesses except for the defendants. And she made the ruling that because every one of the witnesses for prosecution was a law enforcement official, that the defendants were not allowed to defend themselves against what law enforcement said. And they had already decided that defense could not talk about what the BLM did or the FBI or anybody. They could not talk about any of the negative stuff that was done by the BLM. And since all the prosecution witnesses were law enforcement, defense is not even allowed to cross-examine them. I mean, how much worse can it get, and how much more plain can it be that, you know, to the jury,
right,
that it's a kangaroo court? And I don't know. I know the supporters outside made a call out for everybody to show up in Nevada. They had about 80 people outside in support this morning. I don't know whether that's going to be all or whether there'll be more coming in, but it could get very interesting. But I'm in more fear that there's going to be violence. I mean, this is, by the expression on the jury's face, they had to know, they have to know what's happening. And so, you know, if they don't come up with a not guilty verdict, there's a problem. There's something going on.
Right. Now, this judge is a female judge?
Yes.
I wonder what they have on her that she is so bent on making sure that this case, you know, gets found guilty.
And she's an immigrant on top of that.
I wonder if she's illegal.
She I came from
doubt
Cuba.
That, let me tell you.
Came from Cuba. So I don't know, but I've never seen anything so bad. I mean, it's bad enough what they've been doing in the courts over the years, but this is much worse than anything that I've seen.
Right. All right. Anything else, Robert?
No, that's enough, I think. Ollie may have something more to say on that.
I just unmuted him. So, Ollie, if you've got anything to add or you have any other announcements, go right ahead. Ollie.
Hello.
Yeah, go right ahead. Speak up a little more. Raise your volume or speak up.
Hello.
Yeah, go right ahead, Ollie. Speak right up. We hear you. Just speak a little louder because you're coming in a little low, so try to just speak louder.
I didn't know I was coming on. I was on another phone call.
Oh,
anyway,
well, we just had the report from Robert. I don't know if you heard any of that, but we wanted to know if you had anything to report.
Well, I heard half of that. One comment that Andre made today, in addition to what Robert said, the judge told them that when they were up against law enforcement, they did not have a right to lay down and protect themselves behind the barrier. They had no rights whatsoever to defend themselves or even duck for cover. And
who said this? Is this what the judge said?
Yes, the judge said this.
And we understand she's a Cuban immigrant. Do we have any idea how old she was when she migrated here?
I don't know.
Okay.
She's pretty young.
One other comment here. Two or three days ago, I begged him out there. I begged Andrea Parker for affidavits. And I've got a feeling if we might get some, I don't know. I'm praying and hoping we do. But I begged them with pleads, We need affidavits. And I don't know why they're so reluctant to do that. But I've got to go. I'm multitasking right now. I got a phone call coming in. I yield.
Okay. Thank you, Ollie.
Well, just one more statement, John, is that with the testimony today, they had Scott Drexler testifying, but the judge ruled that if she so much as raised her hand, the testimony was to stop immediately.
And who was she talking to?
To the defense.
Really?
Yep.
All right, well, did the jury hear this too, do you know?
Well, they were there.
I wonder how they think they're going to get away with this if the jury's hearing all this stuff.
They're just, it's like they think they may have the jury believing them, I guess, thinking that they're right on everything. But I tell you, I don't think the jury does believe them.
Does the jury look like a reasonably mixed group of people?
Well, whenever they had jury selection, there was five people that were denied by the defense. And the judge at the end of the selection, she says, she brought them five back up and says, they're okay. They're going to be on the jury. So it was like five that was pretty much handpicked by the judge.
What kind of reaction on some of this stuff do you see maybe in the, you know, in the defense lawyer's face or body language or anything?
She is threatening the defense lawyers to the point where they themselves told her today that they felt threatened and that they were asking for attorneys to represent them.
Wow. I wish we could get the recording, you know, the transcripts or the recordings of this stuff. It's so important if we can only get a hold of that.
Yep.
And I know, Ollie, if you're listening, you know, maybe you know somebody who's got them. This is pretty sad.
Well, I've been working with a lady out there in Nevada, hoping that she could get the transcripts, but nothing's come of it yet.
Right. Okay. All right. Anything else? Is that
no,
it?
No, that'll do it.
Okay, I don't know if we have anyone else. I did see Gerard on a few minutes ago, but I don't see him right now. So I guess we'll move on. I don't see Brent. Brent, if you're here, hit *6 to get into the queue. Maybe you know, did anyone talk with him this week to make sure he's got the host key?
I don't think so. I don't.
Yeah, I know I didn't talk to him, so I don't know if Jan had a chance or what. But
I don't know.
Anyway, Jan, are you back on? Oh, wait, it looks like Jan.
Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
I'm in the Q&A. That's the only place I can get on. Yeah, Brent had the all of the information last week, and he got on okay, but maybe he's having the same problems I am. I can't get on here except in the queue. We do have a couple questions, if you'd like.
Okay. We are broadcasting over through the room, though, right, through our website?
I think so.
I see calls over there, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Dan.
The first is not really a question. It's something that someone found as a quote. It says, one form of lawsuit you want to learn about is injunction, also called the power of the people. Injunctions are able to command high officials to answer your questions and concerns about what they're doing with your children, your tax dollars, and the future of your country. There are no limitations on injunctions. You can file a complaint seeking an injunction to require a local school board to tell your children they're not being taught, or they are being taught, non-traditional values. You can file an injunction to stop chemical dumping or to fill in dangerous holes left by an abandoned excavations. You can even bring an action to enjoin leaders to explain why government doesn't teach its public even the simplest points of how to win in court. Force government and giant business to answer you on the public record or go to jail. It's your right. It's your power. Demand justice. So I guess he's pushing for injunctions.
Well, yeah, I got to admit, I don't know too much about injunctions, but it sounds interesting. I didn't realize that you could do so much with them. So we'll take a look and see what we can figure out on injunctions.
Okay.
Okay.
The second, this is from someone who has a Native American friend who has a land grant from President Andrew Jackson. It states that she owns 88 acres in northern Minnesota, near or on the Itasca State Park land. Does she have any recourse to secure this property through the courts?
Well, of course, I don't see why not, even if it was an Indian issue, that has to be dealt with by the United States, even Indians, everybody, it doesn't matter who you are, even if you're an immigrant coming, visiting this country, you have all your unalienable rights, and we must adhere to those unalienable rights to even our visitors or friends, relatives, anyone in the United States. So, sure, I don't see why not.
Okay.
I think a case can easily be made if they tried to deny. Okay. That would be a denial of due process, by the way.
All right. Okay. I have another long question, but it's from Felicia, and she works till around 10 and gets on the call about 10:30. So if we could take a break sometime around 11 and go for her question, that would be great.
Okay.
And I don't have any other questions.
All right. Sounds good. I thought I saw Gerard come back on. I guess he's off again.
I haven't seen him.
Oh, I've seen him come on at least. I thought I saw him come on twice. In fact, I was going to call on him before Jan came back in. So.
He's not here now.
Okay, and I don't see Brent.
No.
Brent, if you're here, pop into the Q&A. Okay, I guess he's not here. So I guess we'll go straight to Q&A. I don't have anything particularly to share. Only the same things that we talk about constantly and often. You know, we need money. If anybody is not given, we're asking everybody to give $5 a month or more. Some people can't afford more. We need to be supported. Also, we did file that report, which is an investigation into 9/11. Everyone should be up there reading it. We're going to be calling at some point in time. I don't necessarily see this as happening very soon. It could, but I don't see it. But at the right time, when we feel the timing is right, and there'll have to be a few things happening in order for us to think that the timing is right, we're going to call the grand jury to make considerations on this case. Now, a couple of names are in that report, and there are other names that we need to add in there, and we need to get more evidence against those individuals. We'll see how that goes, and as we collect that information, we will be posting it up and we'll notify the people. But there's quite a bit of reading and quite a bit of video to be watched on the evidence that we have concerning a criminal report on the 9/11. So again, everybody needs to really start doing this now. reading and looking at the videos, and then keeping your eyes open. And we'll make mention whenever we put anything new up there, we'll make mention that we have something new there in the Monday meetings, and then you'll get up and read that. Because when we do finally come together to consider this case for potential indictments, we're going to expect everyone to have read the evidence and watched the evidence. And if we wait till the last minute, it's just going to take too long for people to do. Again, there's quite a bit of evidence there. I find it very interesting reading. You know, you're constantly being gripped into the reading. Also, the videos for sure are very drawing, you know. They're very interesting to see what happened, what was going on, and to just look and examine at all this evidence and all these engineers and PhDs commenting in their specialty concerning whatever evidence is in view at the time when they're talking. But anyway, everybody should get out there and start looking at that stuff now. And again, keep your ears open for new evidence, and then sometime in the future, don't know when, but sometime, at some point in time, we're going to be calling for people to consider an indictment. Okay, with that, I guess we'll move to Q&A, since I don't see Brent, so, and I don't see Gerard either. I thought he might have some things to share too, but okay, let's do that. Let's go to Q&A. We've got Terry from New Jersey. Go right ahead, Terry. You got the mic.
Yeah, I was just wanted to bring up something about Anna Navarro. It turns out that she is her parents were immigrants from Cuba, and I was just looking at this article on Redoubt News. I'm trying to find it. Unfortunately, let me just see here. Okay. No, that's not it. All right, I'm sorry to take up your time here, but basically...
That's okay.
You can go to Redoubt News, and I think it's redoubt.org, and you can find out a little bit about her. She's 51 years old, and that's about all I can tell you at this moment.
Okay. .org. Redoubt.org.
Right.
All right, I'll check that out and see what I can find on that. What's the judge's name? Anna what?
Gloria Navarro.
Anybody know how to spell that? Or a good guess?
N-A-V-A-R-O.
I think there's two R's.
Or.
I could be wrong. Try either way.
All right, N-A-G-A-R, possibly R-O?
Yes.
Okay. All right. We'll look that up and see what we can find. All right. Anything else, Terry?
No, that's it.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate it. Okay, let's take our next caller. It's, who is this? Goodness, I hit the button. 580 area code.
That's Ed Pitty.
This is Ed from Duncan.
How are you doing, Ed?
Oh, I've been really bad the last couple of months now. I just want to apologize for me not being on the Thursday night natural healing. I usually, I was the one that started doing it, and I'm sick as a dog lately. I'm trying to, long story, but I'm doing this titration with my new medication for my pulmonary hypertension, and it's really hard for me to do breathing and have stomach problems. But anyway, I just want to apologize, but I'm going to come in and out of and be still part of you guys, of course, until I feel better. It should take about another month or so. But my question is this, as far as that Las Vegas thing, I just had an idea. I don't know if anybody thought of this already, probably did, but is there any other NLA members that are in Las Vegas that have connections with sheriffs that are on our side that can actually get there and maybe help with the cause? I just thought of that, so I'll yield with that.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, again, you know, sheriffs are frightened because they don't know the law. They're not educated. Goodness, they're not even educated in the Constitution. And None of us are, and that's why we're in such big trouble, because people have no clue on how serious this is. I mean, to some degree they do know, but they really don't know the law, and these people are getting away with murder, literally. So, I don't know.
No, the sheriff has already proven not to be constitutional.
Okay.
Okay. Anything else?
I yield. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Let's go to our next caller. This is a Skype call. Go right ahead. Give us your first name.
And, Lori from Colorado.
How you doing, Lori? Go right ahead, Lori.
Great. Thank you. Okay. Just heard from John Lamb, and the courtroom has been packed with observers. They've been waiting in line. When somebody comes out of the courtroom, then they send new people in. So that's been a good thing for today. Also heard that the jurors have made a request to get legal advice, because if they are going, if Navarro is going to give, you know, going to hold them, file something against them, they want to know what their, you know, where they stand with it. So the juror, there are a lot of the jurors that are even going out for attorneys. And how to spell Navarro, it's capital N, then A, V is in Victor, A-R-R-O. And I'm finished.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank
appreciate
you.
That.
That's something when the jury has to get lawyers.
Right.
That is the strangest thing I've ever heard. And
yes.
What is the reasoning behind this? I mean, what are we hearing?
Well, Judge Navarro has said that if anything is said, gets back to her, they're going to be charged. Now, charged with what? She didn't say.
Wow, this is a real tyrant, huh?
It is. It's unbelievable.
Wow.
Okay. Only,
there is so much treason being spoken in that courtroom.
Well, we need affidavits. We need people to give us affidavits on this stuff. You know, and if anybody does get a hold of the transcripts, you know,
we've
we
been
need
begging
that too.
For them.
Yeah. Okay. We'll see what happens.
Thank you.
You know, people have to stand up. If we're going to have liberty, you got to stand up for it. It's not free. Okay, thank you. All right, we'll take our next caller. It's 70. I don't know what happened to the caller. Did we lose that caller?
John, you hear me?
Yeah, 706. Go right ahead. What's your first name and your state?
This is Kenneth, and I'm in Georgia, Augusta, Georgia.
Kenneth from Georgia, go ahead.
I hit the queue by accident, John. I thought I was muting myself out, but I didn't. I didn't have a question. Thank you, though.
Okay. All right. Let's go to our next caller. It looks like April from North Carolina. How you doing, April?
Hey, John. I wanted to know if you all heard about what Jeff Sessions had to do about the Federal Medical Marijuana Act.
If I knew what?
Jeff Sessions. He is trying to get Congress to squash legalizing the Medical Marijuana Act, where it's federally legal in all states for medical use. He's trying to squash it.
You know, it's something we do want to battle is these people that are trying to stop the use of drugs for pain and or other, you know, things. You know, there's quite a bit of different things out there that are natural stuff that can cure many diseases. And of course, these people, you know, they just don't want it out there. Jeff Sessions outgoing doing this, you know, this just tells us a little more about this guy. You know, he's not going to help us. There's no doubt about that. I know the president's going through a hard time, and he's battling the enemy in the White House. And, you know, We don't know how much he could do for us right now, but we're definitely going to do something very soon and copy the president on it, no doubt about that. But
he's trying to say that that marijuana is more dangerous than any drug out there, and that statistics show it.
Yeah, well, he's full of baloney. Hey, look, at you know, people have the right to take care of and deal with their behavior on their own. They don't need the government stepping in. And if people want to use some of this stuff for recreation, that's their business. And if they end up overdosing, again, that becomes their business. I mean, hopefully people don't do that, and we could try to talk with them. But you can't go around running around taking knives away from people and maybe cars, because even a car is a weapon. Nobody should walk around with a hammer, maybe. We should get all these carpenters and take their hammers away because they may hurt themselves. I mean, this is so ridiculous. It's pathetic. And of course, all the reasoning behind this is the pharmaceutical companies that we know just cornering the market on their drugs that do destroy. I'll tell you, I don't want any part of any of the stuff that these people give out. My doctor has given me all kinds of stuff for many different things that I've gone to over the years, and I won't take any of that stuff. I look for the natural stuff to assist me, and I've been pretty successful dealing with my problems using natural remedies. But, something we'd like to do something about soon. We got so many issues. There's so many things going on. We've got to ask ourselves the question is, what do we really want to fight first? And we really want to help the people who are serious in trouble. Is in serious trouble, maybe people who are, in jail or on trial, like out west, what's going on out there. We have to put our time into that if we can get more information. We're getting ready to file a lot of stuff on Lavoie Finnegan and that murder and the earlier part of the trial out in Oregon, when they did up in the wild life preserve. But we'd like to get some more information on what's going on. I mean, we're getting this information, but we need affidavits. We need people giving us the evidence so we can compile it, put it together, and be able to, do show causes maybe on these judges. Maybe do some writs. I'm not sure exactly which way we might go with this, but there are things we could do if we had the evidence. We got to have some evidence. So anyway, we'll see where we go. April, I'm with you on that. We're going to try to do something, but I don't know when that's going to happen.
I'd like to follow up on the marijuana thing. And marijuana, in accordance with the federal government, is illegal. It's the individual states that made marijuana legal in their states. So I don't see any way that the federal government, they can't override state law. So
they certainly don't have the authority to ban anything. Poison, poison is dangerous. My goodness, maybe we shouldn't let people buy rat poison. After all, they can kill themselves with it. It's so insane. And what's really bad is, again, reality is the way one perceives it. And people, the mass have bought into all of this stuff. They've been hypnotized. They've been lulled to sleep, and they're buying all this stuff. And they'll be the first ones to step up and say guilty. Unless you can really educate them, and that's the other problem, because you could build great cases in a courtroom on all these things we're dealing with, and when people, sit down and consider these things and start to see a different point of view, they all of a sudden, you get a different perspective, and the whole thing changes, because it's all logical, you're going into court, really, it's all about the facts, But
I don't worry too much about them banning marijuana, because they can't. It's the individual states that have made it legal where it is legal. Mm-hmm. So, marijuana is already illegal federally.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of people don't know about this. It came out about, I would say, around 6 months ago. All the places that are selling cannabis in the states that are illegal, They're the ones that know that federally they passed the bill that it is medically legal in all states now. But they're not advertising it.
Well,
and Jeff
Sessions
wants to pass, he wants to change that. He's trying to change their mind right now.
Well, he can try, but if the states don't let him do it, then nothing he can do about it.
Yeah.
What about the MS? What's happening with that? How do you pronounce that? Spascosia or something?
The what?
April?
I know what you're talking about, but I haven't heard anything new on it for quite some time.
Yeah, I think April was reporting something coming
with the kratom
up against it. Yeah. Well, how do you pronounce that?
Kratom. K-R-A-T-O-M.
Oh, okay. Kratom. Okay, because I'm looking at the bag here and it says S-P-E-C-I-O-S-A. M-M-M.
M. Speciosa.
Okay, what is that? The
that's the name of the plant. It
okay.
is a it's a plant in the coffee family that's been around for decades in other countries, and just a couple centuries ago it became legal in the United States. And now that people are getting off of painkillers and at a pain clinic, and people are getting off drugs with it, now the FDA wants to try to make it a Schedule I drug, which they were supposed to do last September, but because so many people wrote in and signed petitions and everything, they actually put a hold on it, but they're still going to try to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as long as they can bulldoze it through, then they, you know, they're going to try.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah, they want to take away all our rights to natural substances, so we have no choice but to take their chemical.
Well, they're also taking away. It looks like they're trying to just kind of ban even painkillers. I mean, you know, anybody taking oxycodone or any of those things, which is I've looked at some of this stuff, and oxycodone you can overdose. Okay, you can kill yourself through an overdose. But other than that, on the long term, if you're using it just for, pain, and you don't get high off of it, the key is not to get high. The key is to take only enough to bring your pain level down that's bearable. And and sometimes it'll even disappear. Depends on how bad your pain is. But you get to figure that out on your own body. As long as you're taking it at that level, you could be taking it for 10 years and you could stop on a dime after that. There's no problems.
Oxycodone.
Oh, yes.
I took it for 9 years, and when I tried to cold turkey it, I almost killed myself doing it.
Well,
wasn't for Kratom, that I wouldn't have been able to get off it. Kratom got me off it without no side effects.
All right. Well, look, with you, you know, you might have taken a little too much at the time, and you were just taking too much more than what you should have taken. You know, if you just take it just to the point of your pain barrier, and I spoke to a couple of doctors about that, and they all agreed that, look, at you know, this stuff really is not bad as long as you don't abuse it, and you're using it for your pain. And you know, if you take too much and you're getting a little dizzy and stuff, you're getting high, you're going to develop an addiction.
Here they make you go to a pain clinic, and you have to take every pill they give you, because when I was 22, when I became handicapped, I'd go get a bottle of painkillers. It would last me 6 months because I took it only when I needed it. Nowadays, because of Keith Ledger killing himself as their excuse, they're saying that you have to go through a pain clinic. You have to be drug tested and treated like a drug addict. You have to take every single pill they give you, or they won't give you any at all.
Well, again, of course, this is all restrictive, and this is the point. It's none of their business. Okay, that's the point. Depending on how people want to treat themselves, I can tell you firsthand on oxycodone, I've never become addicted to it, and I used it for quite some time for pain, and I've never went beyond the point. And when I stopped, I had no withdrawals, no problems. I go back and forth on it now. From time to time, you know, I still get my prescription and I use it here and there. But basically, I'm using mostly the that leaf, the tree that you were
kratom.
Kratom. I'm using mostly kratom, and I find that to be really good. Matter of fact, I actually find that better than the oxycodone, to be honest with you.
I do too.
And so that would be my choice of dealing with pain. But at the same time, I still have to have the oxycodone. Sometimes my pain level is real high, and I might take two of my pills or something, and it'll take care of it. But, you know, also, people learn to live with a certain amount of pain. But it's especially in the evening when they're trying to rest and go to sleep, and the pain level is so high you just can't even sleep, you know. And that these people are taking all this away from us, you know.
Yeah.
I know
and
so
the
many
ones
people
that,
with
the
problems
that work, they don't want to give you.
Literally cry themselves to sleep because they've been removed off their pain medication and they just can't deal with the pain. I personally know someone very close to the point of, you know, they just don't want to deal with it no more. And this is the government causing all these problems, you know. And again, look, they have nothing to do with these things. People should decide for themselves what they want to do. If they're going to get stoned on it, they're going to get stoned on it. And that's a social problem. It's not a problem of the drugs. It's a problem of the way people were reared. It's a problem with our schools deal with drugs and deal with situations and morality. That's the problem right there. Raise up a child on how they should walk, and they will not depart from it. That's a promise in the Bible, so I believe that. You know, if we raise up our children morally through the schools, and families, of course, should be doing the backing up the schools, you know, the morality. Actually, it should be the family, and the school should be backing up the family. But these days, you know, it could go either way because we are so lost as a society. But look at the children. If we start really just training our children and really teaching them what they really need to know, teach them responsibility and to be responsible people and people that could be counted on, and of course they need to see people that they can count on. They need to see people who are responsible in their lives in order for them to really, you know, get the lesson. But we've gone so far off the deep end. I mean, we send our children to watch these movies that I can't believe it. Some of these, I went to the movies about a month ago. I went to see a movie. I was just and I took my 14-year-old nephew there, and I was just blown away what I saw on those screens. I mean, at a movie that was only supposed to be PG-14, it just shouldn't be there, you know. And there's always violence. These games are all violent. So we're just training our children really to be violent and sexual and immoral and self-pleasing. Then we have all tweets and all this instant pleasure. I mean, we're dying as a society. We're just dying. We're going to kill ourselves. But anyway.
They're doing it to us. Yeah, they're doing it
so
to us. And with the painkillers, I get very mad every time I see any officials on TV saying that the epidemic of opioids, when they're the ones that caused it. If they didn't start these pain clinics, people would be going to doctors like I did way back then and just getting enough to cover what you need instead of making you take what they give you.
Well, that is the problem, yes. And look, again, it's okay to have a doctor prescribe this stuff and monitor it and do the blood testing and all that. I think that's important. You see, making sure things are going well and people aren't getting injured, maybe hurting their livers or whatever. But generally speaking, on the long term, alcohol is more dangerous than oxycodone as far as the long-term use is concerned. I don't see anything. If you go look it up, you won't find anything where oxycodone destroys your liver or something, or your kidneys or something. You know, you just don't see that in there. Go read up on it. You'll see there's no real danger. The danger is in the overdose. But heck, you can overdose on a lot of different things.
Well,
and
also the people that are taking oxycodone, if you take it steady like I was, what happens is your body actually depends on it so much. When I would wake up in the morning, I couldn't get out of bed without taking a painkiller. And now that
I agree. Hold on. I agree with you 100% on that, but people just need to be educated on that. Again, you know, when I was taking it, you know, I would never take it in the morning because I knew I had to go out to drive. But you know what? As soon as I started moving around, and I forgot about my pain. It's when I sat down to relax for a while and I start to realize I got pain. And, you know, when you get back up and you get back into the move of things, you know, your pain disappears again. Occasionally I'd have to take it during the day, but rarely I did. The problem that people, you know, they take the pill, and I've talked with nurses on this, I've talked with doctors on this, and they all say the same thing, to keep ahead, especially the nurses. The nurses will tell you, you got to keep ahead of the pain. Oh, no, 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 no. You take your pill as the pain is necessary. okay?
Right.
I take one pill, and if that pain doesn't hit me where I realize or become conscious of it, or whether it's there or not or whatever, and I don't take another, then that's it, you know, gone. Now, I don't really take much of it anymore, but I do take a little bit from time to time. Again, that kratom stuff is pretty good. Kratom, how do you pronounce it?
Kratom.
Kratom, like a crater, kratom.
I stopped taking narcotics altogether, and I take nothing but the kratom now, and I feel like I got my life back.
Yeah, well, my fear is they're going to make that illegal, and then what are we going to do then, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I have a lot of trouble sleeping at night because of the pain, you know? And that kratom works really great, I want to tell you. I have to take 10 of those pills to keep my pain away, to be able to go to sleep. But it really literally takes it away. It's gone. So, all right. Anyway, let's move on. Anything else?
President Trump made a speech about the car plowing into the crowd, and when he made his speech, he was talking about how America is protected by the Constitution, always has been, always will be, and I just think that's ironic when our constitutional rights are being violated.
Right. Well, he's making points, and I'm sure he realizes and knows that all the constitutional problems taking place. Look, the problem is this, tyrants. That's the problem. We have to identify them, and we have to bring them to justice. And it's a hard thing to do, but that's what needs to be done. And that's why we're trying to get our courts back, so that the people can bring these people to justice. And by the way, I got a returned letter, you know, that we mailed out for one of the what do you call it, the non-judicial foreclosures. Give me a call tomorrow or something. I want to get you the information on that. You're going to have to get a hold of the people, and they got to get a more solid address because it's a bad address. Okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Give me a call tomorrow. We'll talk about.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we had that one person who their address was bad. But no, we have a judge now that with a bad address. The judge did not get the papers. Okay, so we need they need to look into this.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, let's go to our next caller. Let's see. We're going to go to Terry from New Jersey. Go ahead, Terry.
Okay. I just wanted to get back to you on. That thing we talked about earlier.
Oh, by the way, hold on a minute, Terry. Anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6? There's only a couple of people in there right now. Star 6 to get into the queue. Go ahead, Terry.
Every time I get on, I'm looking at something else. Okay, but redoubtnews.com, they had actually the author has written several articles for that website. And he also said there's a link to that article, which I sent you, by the way, and says that he is a witness to telling the jury that that they cannot consider jury nullification or the Constitution. So the author of this article is somebody you should get in contact with if you're looking for an affidavit.
All right. And that's at readout.org?
Redoubtnews.com.
Redoubtnews.com.
Right.
And what is the title of the story I'd be looking up?
I don't know. I got so much stuff here.
All right, that would be read, R-E-A-D-O-U-T, readout.
R-E-D-O-U-B-T, I believe it is.
Oh, Redoubt. Okay, I see it. News.com. All right, I'll see what I can find on it. And
you got to think that he's an author for this website. He's written several articles and about the BLM and all this stuff. And if he's witnessing this and he's saying this in these articles, he's got to be involved with other people who are witnessing.
Well,
no doubt.
You know, one of the things we're trying to do is get groups of people who do this kind of research to go out after these things and to get these good news stories and then follow up trying to get a hold of these people to quiz them on, where what their source is. And it's hard to get people who could go out and do this research, you know, and they have to follow up on it. You know, they make the getaway, make that phone call and so on. And maybe for some people it's hard for them to get on the phone and talk to people. I don't know. You know, but, you know, this is what we need to do. But I'll make some notes and get it out to some of the people working with us. I might even go out there myself on this one and see what I can get.
That might be the guy that you and Gerard did a show for, you know, something with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've done so many, I don't remember.
Yeah,
well,
Redoubt News.
The archives.
Redoubt News is one of them that you and Gerard have talked with here just recently.
Okay. All right, well, we'll take a look
into
that.
I found it, and he said, Gloria Navarro probably grew up listening to many stories about the treachery of Fidel Castro.
Hold on a minute. Did you say Gloria Navarro? Or,
yeah.
Because
yeah.
I heard Anna Navarro.
No, Anna Navarro is on, she's a political pundit on the news. So I'm not surprised that you transpose them.
Yeah, someone gave me Anna,
but
it's Gloria. Got it.
And it says, probably grew up listening to many stories about the treachery of Fidel Castro, but somehow has been unable to see how it correlates with people like Harry Reid. In future articles, we will talk about Harry Reid's relationship to the BLM and his corrupt dealings in buying and selling BLM property. And then he's got a link to that, and this link says, Navarro, jury cannot use the Constitution. He's a witness to this. And he says, Navarro said, I am a witness. Jury nullification must be prohibited, and no jury instruction should include any mention of the First and Second Amendment. She went on to say that bringing any mention of the First and Second Amendment to the jury would not be helpful and would confuse them. Should there be any violations of the First and Second Amendment or other constitutional question, that it could be appealed, and it was for the appellate court to decide, not the jury. Of course, that is an outrageous statement, starting with the fact that constitutional questions are for the jury to decide as facts and may relate to, and appeals means long prison time for the defendant as they await an appellate decision. So this guy would be a good affidavit writer, I would think.
Yeah, again, yeah. Well, I definitely will take a look into this one. Look at, we got to do something with this this judge. You know, we got to put her on the carpet, so to speak. We need to do a show cause for her, you know, by what authority. But again, you know, if we had people giving us the affidavits, telling us exactly what's going on in the courts, you know, these people that be doing affidavits should be telling us word for word what's happening. But we're not getting them. So.
Well, this guy's a writer. If anybody.
Oh yeah, we're
going
to try to get him from him. I agree. Yeah. Hey. Remember though, you know, some of his stuff it may be secondhand unless he's actually in the courtroom writing himself. You know, they picked
this up. Well, that's what he says here. He said he witnessed it himself. He said,
oh, okay.
I am a witness.
So, all right. So there he is, then. We'll try to get him.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot, Terry. Okay. By the way, anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6? We only got a couple people, so star 6. Now is a good time to get into the queue. Let's take our next person in the queue. It looks like Margie.
Yes.
Carolina.
Hey. Hello.
How you
yes.
Doing?
Hey. How you doing,
good.
John?
Good.
Yeah, I looked her up. Gloria, Navarro, the judge. And she was appointed by Barack Obama.
Oh, goodness.
She was recommended by Harry Reid.
Oh, that makes it even worse.
Yes.
Wow.
And I think something does need to be done. It's just it's terrible. And
yep. And yeah, it sounds like
another,
she belongs in jail.
Yes. She, it's terrible.
Yeah.
I have a friend that I just came from the jail to see her video visitation. And she's got a long history. I want her to write an affidavit for me. she just, one of them is a common law robbery, and they're going to try to do a trial, a jury trial, I guess. As I said, that's a statute. That'd be a statute trial, right? Grand jury trial there.
Yeah, I'm not sure what you mean by a common law robbery or something.
That's what they say. I went down there to try to, I just try to see what it's all about and figure it out. And it really wasn't much going on when I went down there last week for this. It really wasn't a hearing or anything, but the judge was in there. But yeah, it's a common law robbery. That's what they say. She did take the money. She did. She has. She does have a drug problem. I said, her name's Shelley. I said, we need to get that taken care of too. You know, you need to get into a program. And then she's got two other things that are coming up Wednesday at another county. In another county, these are old charges. Uttering a forced instrument, what that means is writing a bad check. And another one is a larceny after break and enter. And I said, any injured party? You know, no injured party there. I don't think there's any injured party. But would we be able, if I have a right to affidavits, John, on these three things, these three incidents? Is there anything, she's in jail right now. But, is there anything we can do?
Well, again, you know, I don't know that there's much we could do on the one hand. I mean, on the other hand, nobody's getting due process. I mean, clearly she didn't get due process. Clearly she didn't get justice. Look at when people are stealing, and maybe they're stealing, it sounds like because they're on drugs and they need money, and they go out stealing money maybe to buy drugs or maybe even to buy a little food or whatever it is that they're doing. You know, you got to get to the point of having a little compassion at the same time. Now, that doesn't mean that you want to do things that's going to enable her, but clearly, you look at, if she has robbed somebody and she's caught in the act, clearly, one of the things the court should do is require her to get drug-free to begin with. Putting her in jail is not necessarily the right thing to do. I mean, it sounds like maybe if she's homeless, maybe she needs to be in some kind of rehab program. She needs to get a job. She needs to get whatever counseling she can, because she needs to pay back that money she robbed. And maybe threefold. I don't know, whatever it should be, you know. Again, we don't have juries and we don't have courts that decide things right, you know. You fix a person as best you can. You show them compassion. You help them.
Yes,
but at the same time, you play tough and require them to do the right thing now and pay restitution and so on and so forth. And you get them to a point, and hopefully you give them a good kickstart back into society. Throwing them in jail, giving them a hard time, abusing them, not forcing restitution, not teaching the wrong, how to make it right. The fact that we're not doing those things just makes these people worse. And eventually they'll escalate into more and more crimes and more problems and maybe more and more drugs.
Yeah.
You know,
something
unique has got to happen in a person's life that's lost in that world. And often kindness and compassion and being tough to make them do the right thing, force them to do the right thing at the same time is usually the best medicine for this. You know, because look at, you can control these people by putting a ring on their leg. Okay, know exactly where they're going, and when, you know, and if they're a problem with drugs, then you restrict them to the house. They can only go during certain times to go certain places. You find out they head to a place where it'd be a drug neighborhood. You know they're going to buy drugs. You know, look, there's a lot of ways we can deal with these problems, but it all gets back to schools, though. It all gets back to our children. What are we doing with our children? Because we need to stop this cycle.
This is where it happens. I have a 95-year-old friend, and she knows her. Her name's Shelley. And all her life, she's never had a lot of love in there. And they're kind of dysfunctional, the family. She's never had a lot of love. and her father doesn't really love her and all. And she said, if I had, she said, if I had love in there in my family, you know, I probably wouldn't do some of this. And she's a manic depressant. She's, and I said, she said, I have a disease. I said, no, you don't. Not really. But I said, you need the good vitamins and minerals and nutrition in there, but you need to get, you know, you need to get into a program. And there is a program in there. John, I looked everything up. There's a program in there. But she thought she was going to be moved to another jail, you know, another Union County, another place. And so she didn't get into the program yet. But I'm going to have to look into it for her to see what's out there when she gets out. See, when she gets out, she doesn't have anywhere to go. I said, Shelley, this is what we have to find out. You have
but
to...
There is no solution here. There's no solution. You see, they could be using the time that they think they're punishing someone into correcting someone. They call themselves correctional institutions or something. I mean, it's a big joke, you know. If you don't want to correct somebody, make them do the right thing, okay? Force them to do the right thing. Get them into situations where there's people around that are into the social work business that can give the compassion. And
yeah, she has a mentor.
Train them back. Train them. We're not doing anything good. I mean, again, they're just destroying people. I mean, there's a lot of these people in jail. I'm sure our jails are full of a lot of these people.
I'm sure
there are jails filled with a lot of people drive without driver's licenses, too. What a joke that is. Huh? But anyway, okay.
Yeah. I'm going to have her write affidavit just so she learns and knows, you know, and it'll help her. So, you know, and you need to get it notarized in there, in the jail.
Right.
So, she said that another inmate in there didn't do anything, and she's in there, and she's 55. Shelley's 44.
Mm-hmm.
I said, yeah, it's just all about the money. It's all about the money, Shelley.
Yeah. All right. Appreciate it, Audrey.
Well, thank you.
All right,
okay.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you. Let's take our next call. And by the way, still the queue's open. We only got a couple people in there, star 6, to get into the queue. Let's go to the next caller, which is an 828 number. Give us your first name and your state.
This is Barrett from North Carolina.
Did you say Barrett?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead, Barrett.
Oh, well, there was a guy on asking earlier about the sheriffs. I've got a sheriff that wants to listen, wants to learn. I've been trying to get someone to help me get a package together to take to him so we can get a common law grand jury in our county.
Well, you know, again, you know, what is a... people need to be trained. We need to have people that are trained to administrate to people, to give the administration process to the people that are coming to be grand jurists or trial jurists. And that's one of the key things we need to do. But people can become educated, of course. They can come to our website and get educated. You should suggest to the sheriff to come to our website. Matter of fact, we have a page for sheriffs with a lot of information on it. But we have the free constitutional course and the civics course. And we're going to hopefully in the near future put a couple of more courses up there that will be free. And this is something that the sheriff can do or his deputies. The sheriff can have his deputies come up and take these courses too.
Okay,
and,
well, I've already completed both courses.
Huh?
I've already completed both courses.
Well, this is where these sheriffs should start, you know. And if the sheriff wants to make sure his deputies take the courses, if he believes in them and wants to make sure that happens, he could monitor them. I think right now only administrators can look to see who's taking a course. I'm not sure how that's set up. But Jen, do you remember how that's set up? Can anyone go up there and see who's taking courses?
Only the administrators can look and see who's taking the
course. Okay, so what we could do is we can create a special check mark for anyone that's a sheriff, so that they can look and see who's taking the courses. So if they have deputies in there taking the courses, they could check up on them, see if they're moving along in their courses. Or require them to get a certificate. You know, we'll give them a certificate when they complete it. Require them to get a certificate. That's another way.
Right. I've already been to the sheriff. I've taken the statutes. I've taken U.S. versus Williams. I showed him in the state constitution and the statutes where common law applies. We need a common law grand jury, a common law court.
Right. Well, again, you know, we've got a lot of stuff. You can send him from offline. And the key is, look, and bring him to a place where he can go and drink constantly. You know, give him to that watering place, which for is really National Liberty Alliance. And he can even come to these Monday night programs and ask questions. And we could do the best we can to answer those questions and see what we could do. But okay.
Well, here in North Carolina, each county has what they call a jury commission. Okay, these are the people that actually set up the juries.
Right.
Okay. Once appointed by the court, by the judge, the head judge, one's appointed by the clerk, and one's appointed by the county commission.
I bet you they're probably lawyers too. Are they?
Well, actually, our jury commission, all seats have been vacant for 4 years.
Really? Well, look, we need something separated from the court as far as authority, control, separated from the political process, separated from government employment. We need the people to come in and take care of this business.
I've already put together a request from the sheriff to the council, to the county council, to set up the grand jury administrators.
Uh-huh.
Okay, he's going to take this request. Once we get him educated enough, he's going to take this to the county council and request what we're talking about, our county administrators.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the county can afford it. It's not a problem.
Well, no doubt.
Okay.
The key thing is to separate them. I mean, but even if here's one of the problems. You see, if they're controlled, paid for, either through political process, appointments, who is then still back to the political process, the judges and the prosecutors, and they're getting a paycheck from the government, all of that taints the individual, because no matter how pure they are, as time goes on, believe me, they're going to try to control them, because that's what these criminals do. And
okay,
so eventually
they'll become corrupt again.
No, what I'm saying is if you can get these people in, and even if they're under that structure, at least for right now, that's fine. But at some point
he understands that the jury's not under the control of the court. He understands that.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the administration. I'm talking about the administrators for the juries, the people who have to educate. Someone has to write the papers for the grand jury when they do an indictment, okay?
Right.
Someone has to orientate both juries, the grand juries and the petit jury. You know, they have to be orientated. They have to understand certain principles. They have to understand about jury nullification. They have to understand, you know, what is the law and what is the law of the land. You know, and again, in 6 to 8 hours, you can give them everything they need to know and plus give them a book to walk away with so that they can refer to. And also, you know, the foreman should have a direct line to the administrators if he or she needs some assistance, has some questions or whatever. And they can get it from the administrators.
Right.
And then when someone is indicted, someone has to write those papers because clearly they're not trained to do it. And the last thing we want is a lawyer because they fill it up with statutes. And they get them to indict on statutes. So we can't use those people.
That's what I need to do. I need to get taught how to do this paperwork, how to write these documents.
Right. Well, that all starts with taking the courses, which you've already done, reading a lot of the papers that we've already written, we have the outline of a handbook for administrators. We're still in the process of writing it. Time is a problem, you know, trying to get the time to put into the book, whereas at the other end, we've got a lot of time, we've got to write papers, so, you know, we have to... You know, time is just an issue, you know, and there's not enough people really to be able to write all this stuff. So, but we're working on it. We're definitely working on a handbook that anybody who goes through the basic courses and works out of the handbook, they'll figure these things out as they go, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, I've got a sheriff, I mean, he's eager. He's jumping on this.
Mm-hmm. Well, get him to National Liberty Alliance. Get him to come out here. We do have, I believe that we have a mark where they can check off that they're a sheriff or law enforcement or something. I think we have that set up. But anyway, get them to come out here. Get them to take the courses. Get them reading some of the materials out here. They'll start to see that it's all really rock solid stuff. Supreme Court rulings, founding father statements, and writings.
I've been loading him up with all that.
Mm-hmm.
He's already loaded up.
Right. Well, again, get him to come to the source, though, because we got to get it out to other sheriffs, and he'll get it out to another sheriff, maybe, and his deputies, and spread the word, so to speak, you know? All right, anything else?
Okay. Yeah, there was a county in Georgia a couple years ago that charged the county commission with treason to their grand jury, their common law jury.
What happened?
Did anybody...
Say this again?
There was a county commission in one of the counties in Georgia where the people charged the county commission with treason.
Okay.
I was wondering if anybody heard the outcome out of that.
Yeah, I haven't heard about that. I don't know if anybody else has. Maybe they can hit *6, get in the queue, and tell us about it. There's only a couple people in the queue right now, so *6. Well, I don't know.
Right. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
John?
Gerard, I see Gerard's in here. Yeah,
John,
Jan, go ahead.
We have Andrea Parker, who's been visiting the court each day online. I can unmute her. I think she has some stuff she wants to say.
Sure, go right ahead. Gerard, are you having problems with your connection, Mike, or anything?
He finally got in a little bit ago.
Well,
I'm here.
Saw him in a couple of times a little earlier. Yeah, how you doing? Who is this, Andrea?
Andrea.
Yes, it's Andrea Parker. I am the wife of Eric Parker.
Okay, hold on 1 minute, Andrea. We'll give you the mic in
a
minute. Gerard, are you working in here? Are you here?
Yeah, he's here.
Yeah, but I don't hear him. You're muted if you're talking.
Yeah, he's muted, and I can't unmute him.
Let me see if I can unmute him. He's not unmuting, so you'd use it. Let me try that. Yeah, I don't know. I can't seem to unmute him. All right, anyway, if you can get the mic back in a little while, if you want, I'll pass the mic over to you. But let's move over to Andrea. Go ahead, Andrea.
All right. So we had a big day in court today. My husband is Eric Parker. He is in trial. This is the retrial of the first Bundy Ranch trial, the gunman. And the prosecution just rested. And they tried to pull a bunch of stuff. They tried to they made us proffer all of our witnesses. And none of them were allowed to take the stand in front of the jury. And so the only two people that were allowed to take the stand in front of the jury is Eric Parker on his own defense and Scott Drexler on his own defense. Eric Parker took the stand on Thursday, and he could not get a sentence out. They were objecting to him and what he was saying. I think they objected to him saying First Amendment zone. They objected him to mentioning the word snipers. And then everything else was like thought crimes. They objected before he actually said something, like in so much fear of what he was going to say that there was objections. And they did that so much at the end, they took him off the stand for saying, my focus was forward and up and to the right. So this morning we go in and his lawyer had a really good argument. He said, you know, you've given us all these parameters. We can't talk about fear, but he can describe what he saw. And the judge says, well, you misheard me. He can describe what he saw as long as it goes to a defense that is afforded to you. Now, these gentlemen are not afforded a self-defense or defense of others' defense because the government says the protesters went to the BLM. So the BLM and their reaction cannot be looked at as an excessive force when the protesters went to them. And so they're not allowed a self-defense or defense of others' defense. So they're saying anything he says about the BLM's heavy-handedness, it goes to jury nullification. So he was taken off the stand for that. This morning, They're trying to make, they had a motion that all of the defense witnesses except for Perez, or not their witnesses, the defense themselves, had to give up their closing statements for the prosecution to approve before trial. And that Scott Drexler would have to proffer his testimony in front of the judge and the prosecution and not just the jury. Now, we took a break, an hour break, and Leventhal came back in, and she backed that judge into a corner. She told him, now, the way, because basically she's threatening the lawyers. And he threw it back at her. He said, I kind of feel like all of our lawyers, we all need to be appointed lawyers and talk to them, because you're threatening us with contempt of court. And I don't feel like I can defend my my person with the way under the constrictions that you have me under. And so she changed her mind. She is not going to make the defense give up their closing statements. And Scott Drexler was able to take the stand in front of the jury today. And they didn't object. He was able to get his whole testimony out. They didn't. They did object a lot, but he was still able to actually finish a sentence, unlike Eric Parker was. And he, at the end, he was able to get out that he was in fear of his life twice. I'm sorry I had to go so fast. My phone is dying, but I really appreciate you letting me on to talk about this.
Well, we appreciate that. Let me ask you a question or two. What's your perception on the perception of the jury of what's going on here?
Well, yeah, I know that they were very upset when Eric was taken off the stand. And then also the jury gets to ask questions after each witness. So the jury today, they had 10 jury notes for Scott Drexler. Only 5 of them were asked out loud in the courtroom. So the other 5, we don't even know. So to me, if I was a juror and I wrote a note and the judge refused to even say my note in the courtroom, that would make me upset.
Mm-hmm.
That would make me think they're trying to hide something.
What kind of questions did the jurist ask?
Let me get my book out here.
And by the way, while you're looking that up, you know, if there are many people that are doing or can do affidavits on these things, if we can get a hold of them, we'll try to do something here, do a show cause to this judge. Also, if anybody is getting a copy of the transcripts, if they can get us a copy, we can utilize that for some of the questions that we would have in our show cause for
okay.
this judge. But
one of the things I noticed today, because we did have a rally down there and threw tea at the court steps, and there we filled the courtroom completely full, and there was people waiting outside that couldn't get in. And I believe that that was the reason the judge changed her mind in the first hour. We had so much of a presence. But I did notice the candy bowl was not passed around during the sidebars today. Normally when they have a sidebar, since the second day, they brought in a bowl of candy to pass out to the jurors during sidebars so that they think it's a good thing instead of a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so
tell me what kind of questions did the jurist ask?
So one of the jurors' questions was, did you know at the time you provided the interview to Longbow Productions that they were the FBI? He said no. Another of the questions was, again, about the undercover agents. One of the questions, this was a person that's not so great, were you going to Bunkerville to get credit with a certain militia, and then why did you choose that militia over a different militia, I think is what the actual question was. Mm-hmm. And then another question, the Idaho 3% doing community service, yes, is there still trainings, but is there still training and militia aspects? And he said, yes, there is training for safety with firearms is always important. Another question, were you aware of the 3% of Idaho prior to the ranch? And he said, no, actually the 3% of Idaho wasn't even around prior to the ranch.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the only questions out of 10 that were even asked. So we don't know what the other questions had to do with things that the judge said, that's not in the parameters, and we need to stick to what the parameters were. And that's the reason she gave for not even asking those other questions.
Well, I'm not too sure. You know, I've never, ever, ever heard of jurors asking questions before like that, you know, directly to the witnesses. to the individuals. I've never heard or seen that before. And so, you know, I'm very concerned about that. On the one hand, you know, an inquisition is when a judge comes up and you don't have the prosecutor, you don't have the, you know, someone that is defending, a defense lawyer. An inquisition is where an individual comes up, a judge, and asks questions. And that's not a trial by jury, and that clearly is not trial in a common law setting. You know, common law is adversarial, one side against the other. It's a fight, okay? You got the prosecution making a fight against the defendants, and it's a battle.
Yes.
And the purpose of the jury is to be a tribunal, okay? And when they start asking questions, it starts to turn them into an inquisitor. And again, that's not common law. I'm not sure where this is going. This sounds like it's an opening to something that is going to become maybe common thing to push the jurors across and eventually get to inquisitors. You know, there has been a movement in this country for quite some time. They've been teaching this in school, I know, 30 years ago. My brother went to law school, and he was telling me about it. And they're teaching them the positions that jurists really shouldn't be. They have no understanding of the law. They don't really understand things. They need professional jurists. They need judges. So what they're looking for is a jury of lawyers eventually. And can you imagine a jury of lawyers sitting there asking questions to these people, and especially in their professional setting, where this is what they do all day long, every day, year in and year out? This could become a problem. And I just don't understand why. And this could be good for these people. It could have been bad. I don't know.
I can enlighten a little bit on the why.
Yeah.
I believe it was because there was a mistrial the last time, and they wanted to be able to train their case by the jury's question. So, yes, it was one of these things that they wanted to use for their benefit, that if the jurors ask a certain question, then they can provide that evidence, and that way they feel like they get around it and they're a better chance of getting a conviction.
Right.
Well, guess how this backfired on them?
Oh, well,
so
that's good.
You only need one person to ask common sense questions, and then all the other jurors start thinking about those questions or the answer to those questions. So that one person, if they ask enough questions, they can sway people. And that's what I've seen here in this courtroom, is that we have a constitutionally minded juror that keeps asking constitutionally minded questions, and I have seen it grow. Because once they bring up a point and it's pointed out, everyone's kind of like, oh, yeah, I see that too.
Mm.
So it's like,
well,
liberation
that
before
like
deliberation.
Thing. Yeah, if you get someone that is really constitutional, all you need is that one person on the jury. And you can picture that whole jury changing its mindset, seeing another point of view, starting to understand things from a different perspective, and learning at the same time a little bit about freedom that they didn't know about before. And that could be very beneficial. So here is a situation where it could be turning around against them. But on the long run, I can see this as becoming something evil and changing our system. And really injuring the common law process that we have, you know?
Can you hear me?
We can hear you now. What happened?
Oh, boy. Oh, I had more trouble. I don't even want to talk about it. I'm so livid.
Okay.
Anyway, look at this judge has already told them that they can't use jury nullification, so they're not a jury.
By the way, I'm going to pass it over to you. Well, go ahead, finish off, and then we'll talk a little bit, and then I'll pass it to you. Go ahead, finish off.
Look, she already started out by neutering the jury, telling them they can't use jury nullification. They got them asking questions. You know, in England, they used to have the lawyers. That's the kind of courts they ran with professionals, and you didn't get a chance to say anything. The professionals were the inquisitors. That's one of the reasons we broke away from them. And the other thing is when they told them that you don't have a defense because you came to the BLM, this is all about the militia and discrediting neutering the militia action. See, they're so afraid that if these guys get innocence, that there'll be militia actions against the government when the government violates the people. What does she mean? You came to the BLM. Well, the BLM were burning cattle. That's when the militia's supposed to come. So she's telling them, because you came there, you were the aggressor. No, the BLM were the aggressor, and the people have the right
to put their militias out. You see, they're saying that you have no right to be a militia. If you're in a militia, you're a terrorist. That's what this trial's about. And this is the big push. This is the end of the Terry McVeigh Muir building bombing. This is the final stake in the heart to militia. That's what this is about, I believe. Because just what you said, the dialogue of that judge and how she's running this, they don't want anybody to be acquitted in any kind of action that looks like a militia action, which basically this was. They came to the aid of the American people constitutionally under the Second Amendment by the militia, because you had militias there, and that's what's bothering the government, and that's what they want to squash here. And they also want to squash the jury. They want to squash jury nullification. They want to squash that due process, and they want to do it in one fell swoop. That's why this trial is going on, and they failed miserably in Oregon, and so now, like you said, they're trying to polish their case up to try to get a conviction. Look, if they could get that jury out of that court, that's the next step. Get the jury out of the court. So either you get them out of the court, or you turn them into a bunch of paid shills, professional juries, and I think that's where this is going. Anyway, I rest.
All right, Andrea, do you have anything else you want to say, or Ed? I don't know if we lost Andrea.
She said her phone was going dead, so.
Yeah, that's why I was afraid we lost her. Jan, are you still there? Did we catch her phone number, possibly? I think we saw her phone number there. And
yes.
If we did, let's try to give her a call tomorrow or the next day, and let's try to make a connection with her. Maybe she could be a good lead for us to get information from in order to do something in the courts. I mean, clearly, you know, she's involved. Her husband's there, and we'd like to help.
She's one of them that's making videos every day, and I've been forwarding
them. I want to really talk with this woman personally, and I'm sure Gerard would like to also, and a few others, you know, other leadership here, in order to get information and work out a relationship, you know, to move information back and forth and do something here in the court here. So.
Well, I was very surprised to find her here tonight, because I believe in the past she had heard bad things about us from, like, this Syme guy, you know, him and his brother bad-mouthing in L.A., and I think that she had been told some of those things by those two brothers.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very happy to see her come on.
All right, well, okay, let's try to connect with her, Jan, and let's see what we could do. And Robert, if you want to be part of those conversations, we'll try to pull you in when we have them.
Okay.
Sounds
all right, Gerard, I'm going to move the mic over to you, and, you know, the controls over to you, and I'm going to mute myself out for a while. You got the board.
And Gerard?
Yeah.
I see Felicia has checked in. Do you want to take her question now before we get going on something else?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'll hang in there too. Maybe I can help on the question.
Okay, you're unmuted, Felicia. Go ahead.
Hello, Mr. Jan. How are you?
Good.
Did you want? I went down to the courthouse to talk to the sheriff's office, and it's just so strange. They stated that they don't have a record of me speaking with them, and I had to play the voicemail of them calling me back and had to actually take a picture of me actually being there. But basically, he told me that it wasn't a legal document, and I told him, I said, it is a legal document, and he wanted to speak to the grand jury, and I was like, you can't speak to the grand jury. You have to contact them directly. I gave you these papers months ago, and now they're trying to kick me out, and he's like, well, it's a federal case, and I can't give you a case number because it's out of their hands, but I need to be prepared to that these people are actually going to kick me out. And there's nothing that he can do. And I said, well, you're constitutional.
Is this the sheriff?
Yes, this is the,
okay.
Lieutenant Connell.
All Right,
I said, well, you're a constitutional officer. You know, you've been informed about this months ago. And he stated that they really don't go by the Constitution anymore.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And I need to file some kind of injunction at the court to stop
someone,
being removed.
Someone needs to follow this guy when he's rerunning for office again to quiz him on this Constitution. You know, did he make that statement? And, you know, why is it that the Constitution is no longer valid here again, Mr. Sheriff? You know, people
that's
need to dog this guy when he's running for office.
I say you're a constitutional officer. You're supposed to protect my due process, and by you not doing so, you're violating my due process as well. And he was like, well, the only thing I can tell you is to contact a judge to try to stop your removal and filing it some kind of injunction. I don't know. But they're pretty much giving me the runaround as well.
Well, again, you know, just I think I saw something about that they made a claim to you that they actually sold your house already.
Yeah, they did.
So that means they took fiduciary authority when, you know, probably at an earlier date because it takes time to make the closing and get that going. You know, remember, you don't have to get out of there until they really push it hard. I mean, they're going to try every way they can to get you out of there by telling you got to leave or serving you a notice and leaving it on the door. You know, the bottom line is the sheriff's got to come out and actually tell you it's time to go. And he should give you at least a couple of day warning that he's coming out, so that gives you time to prepare to do whatever has to be done should that happen. We did a non-judicial foreclosure paper on you, right?
Yes, sir.
And they're saying that it's not valid
document.
Or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, look, they've been served. I would make sure you get it into the record, the county record, you know, in real property. With the, you know, next to your property there, make sure that the sheriff's been served. I would go to the sheriff with somebody else, a friend, and have them give it to them, to the sheriff again, make a copy, give it to him again, let him know that he's been served, and do an affidavit of service, give a copy of the affidavit of service to the sheriff, make sure you have a couple of copies, and have, you know, for yourself. Do the same thing with the court. Make sure that a copy is served, you know, placed into the court, and do an affidavit of filing. If you can't get them to stamp it, you know, that they've received it and put it into the court, do an affidavit of filing. You know, who you filed it with, so on and so forth. So get an affidavit, but it can't be you. It's got to be someone who's not part of the case, and that should shake them up a little bit. Okay. And then we'll see what we're going to be doing on our end at some point in time. Right?
I tried to file it on the official records on the deed, and the lady told me it would be $121.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It is.
All right. Well, you got to... I don't know why they would charge you something. I mean, the most they could do is hit you with a filing fee, and even that shouldn't be either. But let's say a $15, $20 filing fee, $5, I don't know, something. I mean, what's so big about
$21.
Wow. All right, well, you got to figure out what you want to do with that. I would serve it to them
What's she calling that filing? What is she calling that filing? She's got to have a schedule there with a price on it.
Yeah, what's it called?
Tell her you want to know what she's calling that.
I tried to file the grand jury's paperwork with the deed on record.
Yeah,
I've already filed it into the case,
right?
Which is closed. But it's on record. I've seen it. I've seen the show call today on the internet when I went to the library. It's there.
There's
but
nothing
I tried to file
it
on the...
cost you $121 to file. She's lying.
Yeah, that's insane.
That's what's she charging you? Tax stamps? I mean, come on.
It's
I don't know.
That's the biggest thing that you pay for when you register a deed is tax stamps.
She told me that that's what it would cost to file the grand jury's paperwork against the title and the deed. So.
Well, you tell her I want to know what you're calling that filing and where's your fee schedule that shows me that that costs that kind of money. How do I know you're not just sticking it in your purse and going home?
That's funny.
Look at she gets to make prices up out of the sky. She's got to show you where she, what she's calling it, and where's it going, and where's it comes from, by what authority.
Anyway. I just couldn't believe that the officer told me that they had no record of me being there. And then when I went back downstairs, I seen my name, and I asked the lady if I could take a picture.
Well, you better save that. You better save that picture and stuff, because that's another thing, that they're lying that you were there. In other words, right. They're expunging every record, even your physical being there. But they weren't good enough to get all the records. You went downstairs and found one, didn't you?
Yep.
Really bad.
Yeah, but he told me that they don't go by the Constitution anymore. I couldn't believe he told me that today.
Unfortunately, the people do. And you know, see what this sheriff's doing? He's doing what Kennedy talked about. Those that make a peaceful revolution impossible make violent revolution inevitable. Technically speaking, when they come to your house, and if the sheriff shows up to take it, and unconstitutionally, you can have the militia there. That's a militia action right there, by the people, whether they like it or not. That's what the Second Amendment's all about, whether they like it or not. And I don't care if they hear me saying that, because that's where this is going to come to if they don't straighten their butts up. Because that's what it's about. That's what it's all about. And that's why we need to keep our guns, not to go
hunting. That's why they were down there in the Bundy Ranch.
And that's why the judge is telling them, you don't have a defense because you came to them. So what she's doing is she's negating any militia action. That's exactly what they told her to do. That's what they're afraid of. Look, we got more guns in this country. If the people can win on a militia action, they know they're done. And if there's one thing that communist and evil people are afraid of, they're afraid of patriots with guns, because they don't know how to shoot and they don't know how to hide.
Yeah, he told me go talk to the judge about it, then, because there's nothing that they can do to protect me from being removed.
He's not doing his job. You say I will talk to the judge, but I will also talk to about sanctioning you for. Matter of fact, maybe I should put a suit in against you for violating not upholding my rights under the Constitution, which is your duty. He has a duty to uphold. He has to stand up. Look, he has the power to stand up against the federal government. I mean, that's what Sheriff Mack did. That's what those other sheriffs did, and they won in court in 1997. You got to remind him of that. That he's the top dog in the county, not the judge, not the federal government. We don't care that this is a federal case. As a matter of fact, because it's a federal case, it's actually littler. The local takes precedent over the federal. They got everything upside down and backwards. The power's in the people, not in the federal government, not in the federal courts. The local stuff.
I can't even talk to the sheriff. They appointed me to a lieutenant. I can't even talk directly to the sheriff.
Well, why can't you talk directly to the sheriff?
Because they won't allow me to talk directly to the sheriff.
Well, then you got to look at. You got to do a Rosa Parks thing. You got to get a bunch of people in there, and you got to say, "I need to talk to my sheriff now. He's a public official that we elected." Call the news. Say the sheriff's hiding out. He puts his lieutenants in front of him. He doesn't uphold the Constitution. His lieutenants are telling me that we don't go by the Constitution. I want to hear that out of the sheriff's mouth.
Oh, that'd be a good local news story. I'm sure they'd jump right on that one.
Look, you got to get radical in these things, because that's the thing they fear. You know, they only work good in darkness. So you have to think outside the box. You need people. You need people to amass. And the other, what's her name said there, who was on before, the judge changed her mind because there were so many people out there. That's exactly right. Because that's the only thing they fear is the people. Because that's what they don't really have control over. The only reason they have control over the people, because they're using the psyops and fear, and people are too stupid, and they're afraid to stand up. If we stood up, we outnumber them 800-1, you know?
Then he mentioned something about suing them. I was like, who said anything about suing you guys? All I'm asking you is protection. That's it.
Say that again. You kind of broke up. I didn't really get that.
He said something about me suing them, and I said, I didn't mention anything about suing you guys. All I'm doing is coming to you guys for protection. I said, it's an open federal case, and I gave you the grand jury's paperwork back in June asking for your protection. Now you're telling me you can't protect me. That's it. I'm not saying anything about suing you.
The sheriff probably doesn't want to get involved here because he doesn't want to be. He wants to be able to say he didn't know nothing about it, maybe. And I'll tell you what, you should write a letter to the sheriff and send it a certified copy, you know, certified returns, return signature card and everything for the sheriff, and tell him what the sheriff told you. That, hey, by the way, you know, you guys, your sheriff, your deputy told me that you don't go by the Constitution anymore. I'd like to know if that's true or not. And I'll tell you what, you send a copy of that letter that you're sending to the sheriff, send a copy to the editor in the local newspaper and see if they'll print it. And let's see if they get on the case to ask the sheriff, hey, sheriff, by the way, are we without the Constitution anymore?
If you need to make an issue on that,
there's your battle. There's your battle right there.
Look, if the sheriff is not going by the Constitution, he needs to be removed from office immediately. He's committing
bad behavior. That's right.
If there was a
common law grand jury out there, they can indict him. That's a violation of his duty.
See, they don't really go by the Constitution anymore, and that the grand jury is pretty much null, and a lawyer told me that the grand jury doesn't do anything.
Yeah,
well,
it's amazing.
Because they won't let them do anything.
Yeah, really. All right, anything else, Felicia?
No, sir, thank you.
So, in other words, the Fifth Amendment doesn't apply anymore, right? A grand jury, you know, unless indicted by a grand jury and a jury of your peers, doesn't mean anything anymore, right?
Yeah, I'll tell you, just do this letter to the sheriff. Don't make it too long. Make the point about the constitutional issue that you've been informed by whatever the deputy's name is, that the Constitution no longer exists, and therefore they're not going to protect my unalienable rights here of due process. Basically, you don't have to say much more than that, and ask them, Sheriff, tell me it ain't so. Is it so, Sir Sheriff? Are you teaching your deputies that the Constitution doesn't apply? And if not, are you going to protect my unalienable rights? Send a copy to the editor of the local newspapers and see if you can't get them involved in this. So that it's exposed to the local people through the newspaper, and the sheriff gets this letter. Let's see if he responds. See, now with that certified paper, you know, he's now been put on notice, and now you lose your home, and he does nothing, he's liable.
And if he doesn't respond,
and I would make that point to him too.
If he doesn't respond to that, the next thing I would do is go make wanted posters with his picture on it, wanted for violating the Constitution and the people, hand this out to we the people and the local militias. They might consider that a threat, though. But anyway, I would make a wanted poster, just like they did to us when we were defending that one guy in New York City, and they had posters that looked like wanted posters saying he was a person of interest, remember? We could play that game, too. You put the sheriff's picture right on there, wanted for violations of his oath of office and the Constitution, claims that the Fifth Amendment is no longer the jury and the grand jury.
Well, to play it safe, maybe it should be not wanted.
Nah, you look at he's wanted. You look at in the old West, they would have had a gallows out for him. You know, he's bad. If he took an oath, and he's in violation of that oath.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah,
he said there's nothing that they can do. The sheriff, the lieutenant told me there's nothing they can do. To contact the judge and let her know what's going on. I was like, well, why would I contact the judge when all this went through the entire judicial process? How can I trust any judge?
Right. All right, well, look, try what we said with this letter, copy the editor maybe, and see how that goes. I think you might get some traction there because it sounds like the sheriff's hiding. That's what's going on, in my opinion, anyway. All right?
Okay. Yes, sir.
All right. Thanks, Felicia.
Thanks.
Hey, I see
you.
Brent is out there. Why don't you unmute him?
Oh, what happened?
He's there. Hey, Brent, how you doing?
Yes.
Have you been here all this time? Because we were looking for you.
Well, about quite a while. I came a little late, but I'm here now. But I still don't know how to... We can talk later about it.
Yeah, you know what? You and Jan should talk tomorrow and get into the details. Also, try going up on the you need to be able to come in as host, so you should talk with Jan, and Jan will help you.
Okay. We'll get it figured out.
Right. Meanwhile, maybe we'll leave you unmuted, and you know, you can respond to some of the questions. I know, Gerard, do you want to move to give Brent 20 minutes?
Yeah, I mean, we got time.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm Gerard's going to take the board. Brent, if you want to share something with the people, I'll introduce you, and we'll take it from there, and we'll try to make sure that you stay unmuted. So if you want to respond to any of the questions, you're welcome to do so. So anyway, we got Brent Winters, the author of The Excellence of the Common Law. He's also got a website, commonlawyer.com. Brent, you got the mic?
Yeah, and we have been going through the Declaration of 76. Like to call it the Declaration of 76, but nowhere is the Declaration of 76.
Yeah, we got a really, really bad connection here, Brent. Is that coming through just on my side, or is that for everybody else too? Gerard, are you getting them clear or unclear?
He's breaking up very bad.
Yeah.
Well, real bad.
What are you coming in on a cell?
Yes, but I think I can move my phone. I've learned where I'm sitting, how to do that. This may be better. Is this better?
It sounds better
it
already.
Does sound better. If he starts breaking up, Gerard, just let him know so that he can try to move his phone again.
You
got it.
All right. We were talking about the Declaration of 76, and I said I like to call it the Declaration of 76, and I'm in the habit of calling it the Declaration of 76 because nowhere on that piece of paper is it called, or does it call itself, the Declaration of Independence. That's a name that we've given to it over the decades. And it is not a Declaration of Independence. It is clearly, the words reveal that it is a declaration of shifting dependence from the powers that be, namely Emperor George III, shifting dependence from him for protection to the God of all providence, the maker of heaven and earth, not quoting the exact words, but our Lord, it says at the end. So there's a shifting dependence, and it is that dependence that makes all the difference if it's sincere, not just window dressing, but sincerity, dependence upon one's maker. Men are weak. The strongest men I've known have been the men that have acknowledged their weakness and depended upon their maker. But we're in the Declaration. We've been going through it, the Declaration of 76. We got up to about paragraph 5, and I got into that a little bit. Let me read paragraph 5 of the Declaration of 76. It says this: He, that is King George III, has refused to pass other laws for the accommodation of large districts of people, unless those people would relinquish the right of representation in the legislature, a right inestimable to them and formidable to tyrants only. Now this king, remember, was king in England, King George, but he said he was emperor in his empire. That's different. And the American colonies were not England. Therefore, they were not free soil. Therefore, slavery was lawful here. And by the way, slavery has never been lawful on the island or in the country of England. It occurred at different times. They've come close to slavery, but Justice Mansfield in the Somerset case, which occurred about the time of our separation from Britain, and as he examined the laws of England, that case forced him to do so, and he said he could find nowhere in the laws of England that slavery had ever been legal, outright slavery. Villainage, he said, and other people had said this, villainage, which is close to serfdom, was part of the laws of England. But even a serf at common law has rights he can enforce. He's attached to the land, and he cannot be sold away from that land. Well, slavery in America, because England said this was not a common law country, therefore it was not free soil, slavery was the empire, not the kingdom of England. So slavery was allowed here. That's the way it was allowed, by the way. And that, of course, caused confusion. And we even see the confusion in our Constitution of the United States because it's incompatible with the common law tradition. Well, the king, the executive power, and our president is an analog, is analogous to common law kingship. The common law, kings were not, kingship is not hereditary. Kings are chosen, and they were chosen for centuries in England before the Norman invasion. In fact, the last king, Godfrey, and Edward the Confessor, and all those fellows were chosen by the elders. Sometimes family members were chosen, but there was no requirement. But the executive power was to put the machinery of courts in place and then stay out of the court's business, just as our President of the United States appoints judges. Earlier you were talking about a judge of Cuban descent sitting on the federal bench in Las Vegas, Nevada, presiding over the Bundy case. This judge, as far as I can tell, has never practiced law. An unwritten tradition of our common law that judges be taken from the private practice of law, not from government employment. We're suffering greatly because of that now, not only in on our federal benches, but on our state benches. And when I say that, I'm quoting the statement of the Chief Justice of the United States, the present Chief Justice, Roberts, who wrote in his annual report in the year 2006 that we've changed in America, we've changed where we get our federal judges. During the Eisenhower administration, he said about 40% of our federal judges were from government employment and 60% were from the practicing bar. And in 2006, those numbers were flipped. 60% of the federal judges were...
Hey, Brent, is anybody else having trouble hearing you? Gerard? Yeah, Gerard, are you hearing him okay?
Well, thanks for letting me know. I'll keep you, if it gets so bad.
I hear him just fine.
Okay. If it gets so bad, I'm unintelligible. Type up again.
Okay, good.
I'll move the phone. I don't want to talk.
No, you're fine, Brent.
Okay, thanks. And I don't want to talk to the cubic foot Aaron from a face only. But judges now on the federal bench are 60%. That was in 2006. 60% are from the government employment. And 40% from the practicing bar, and increasingly it's been so since the left, call them the liberals, that's not an accurate name for them, but the communists, the collectivists, the Marxists, they love to appoint bureaucrats to judgeships, people that have spent their life working for government, as this person has. And then add to that that at common law, traditionally through the years, judges were not to be appointed unless they were at least 45 years old, and better if they're 50 or 55. Children have no business on the bench. How can a person, of course, when a fella gets to be over 60, he wonders how anybody under 60 could know much of anything if he evaluates himself properly. And I'm in that position. I'm looking back and I'm thinking, well, there's so much a fellow learns just living, whether or not he tries to or not. There's some things that only time can bring. And then it coalesces, as Winston Churchill said, at about age 60, he said this, all that he had learned, all the mistakes he had made, all of his lessons came together at the right time, right when they appointed him prime minister at the outset of World War II. And he was able to do things then because he had the combined child wisdom of about 60 years. Well, that's what we need for judges. But Americans, back in that day of the Declaration of 1776, were pushing beyond the frontier. As they did so, they set up common law courts. They pushed into areas where there was no government. And without waiting on governments back east to set up government, they set up courts. And it is one of the most fascinating elements of our own history as Americans, that is the way we began. Moving into the Alleghenies, moving down the Ohio Valley, you can read the accounts of how men how men dealt with crime and how they dealt with disagreements. And they did it by establishing juries and asking 12 men, swearing the men, to decide. Then you can read the account also of Supreme Court Justice Fields, who spent his youth in the gold fields of California and learned the same lessons there and how courts were more important than the first branch of our government and the most important branch to be independent for all the complaining we do. We still have juries. Note well, I just saw, and I think I'm getting the straight.
I get dropped again.
What happened, Brent? Don't hear you at all.
I don't know, but I come on. You can now ask your question. I wasn't even in the queue, I don't think.
We got a live panel.
Oh, Brent is muted.
Okay, am I back?
You're back.
Oh, okay. Well, I just got in the news that the Bundy trial was declared a mistrial. The jury was hung. And as bad as the judge may appear in that case, we must be thankful that we do have the machinery in place called the jury. And the jury did what we want juries to do, in spite of any lawlessness that occurred. I feel sure the jury was stacked. It is in most federal criminal cases, which I've been involved with or known about. But even when the jury's... Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you're absolutely right. It was stacked.
Yeah. Well, they always are. But amazingly, the jury is so resilient of an institution that it works even when it's stacked. The jury was hung, and who knows what will happen next. But we have what we call the common law tradition, and that makes all the difference in the world, regardless of any tyranny of any judge, any, as Justice Scalia used to put it, any lone employee of the state. Nowhere is the natural arising of common law courts, juries, and due process better seen, I mentioned this a minute ago, than among the mining districts, from the tin fields of Cornwall to Spain and from the gold fields of Georgia to California, where the unlearned yet able men all arrived at the same first principles of common law and government, and it did impanel juries and did deal with their disagreements and property right problems with the jury before government ever arrived. And our Supreme Court of the United States eventually, as those cases wound their way up from those ungovernment organized courts and juries, those cases wound their way up through the state courts into the federal courts, into the Supreme Court of the United States, and their decisions were ratified. And this brings me to another point. It is the glory, said Blackstone, of our common law and our early common law before the Norman invasion, that our common law brought courts to the back door, this is the way he put it, to the back door of every cottage. Courts were available. Courts were local. You didn't have to travel even to the county seat, or they called it the shire seat. You went to the hundred court, which was equivalent to our township court. And in the mining districts, we need to learn a lesson. In the mining districts of Georgia, California, and Nevada, etc., Oregon, and the Galena fields of northern Illinois, and all those places, when men went there, they formed their own courts. And I believe now that part of our problem is that we depend upon government too much and we don't form our own courts. And Paul the Apostle tells us in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 1 through 7, to do that. Form your own courts. You don't think you're getting justice in the courts and you've got disputes about property among yourselves? Why would you be so stupid as to go in front of a pagan judge who obviously... And that day, he pointed out, they were taking bribes. So he said, impanel your own juries. That's what he says, 1 Corinthians chapter 6. Why wouldn't we do that? Why don't we do that? We as Americans have done it in our past many times. Churches are good places to form courts. Local communities are good places if there is a local community. You want to impanel men to decide the case between you and your neighbor because you've got a problem? That's where you should start. Now, sometimes we call those arbitration courts or just arbitration judges. I've been to arbitration where judges were arbitrators, retired judges. They weren't official courts. But that's not what Paul the Apostle is saying. He's saying impanel juries. The 12-man jury, like the 12 apostles, were impaneled to be witnesses of the evidence of the Messiahship of Jesus Christ. The example is set for us. What's the matter with us that we don't follow it? Are we waiting for a bunch of doofuses that don't seem to, as one fellow said, don't seem to have the sense or the ability to even pour sand out of a boot? And yet we're asking them to govern our country, make decisions for us. Young people sitting on the benches of our land who've never practiced law, who have not a grasp of the fundamental ideals of Americanism, and asking them to administer our courts. There's something wrong with us. And if we really knew who these people were, in many cases, I don't want to say in every case, I know there are always exceptions. But if we really knew who a whole lot of these people were and were close to them, we wouldn't let our children near them. That's how bad they are. They're evil. Some of them are very evil, dangerous, who follow after nothing but filling the lust of their bodies. Well, let's get to paragraph 6. I've got a few minutes left. Paragraph 6 of our Declaration of 76 says this. He, and when it says he, that's talking about George III, who claimed to be emperor in the New World, in North America, of North America. He has called together legislative bodies at places unusual, uncomfortable, and distant, keyword distant, from the depository of their public records, for the sole purpose of fatiguing them into compliance with his measures. Fatiguing them into compliance, worrying them, wearing them out. If you just do what I want, I wouldn't make life so hard on you. Now, as much as possible, people must keep their legislatures and also their courts close and accessible. Keeping in mind, of course, that closeness, though better enabling accessibility, never ensures accessibility. I go into our local courthouse. There are two of them, two neighboring counties here. One of them, you want to go to the courthouse, you just open the door and walk in, as it has been for the last 199 years in that state. And the other courthouse, you have to be shook down by technological machinery and sheriff's deputies before you can get in the courthouse. Both of them are near, but one of them is accessible and the other one isn't. And there are a good many people that won't go in at all because they believe it to be and feel it is demeaning to them as Americans that they're treated that way in their own courthouse. So closeness does not always enable accessibility. The evil empire and the useful idiots of it can find ways, even if your courthouse is close, to keep you out of it. And of course, if people are not comfortable going in courthouses, trials are not truly public. And if trials are not truly public, it won't be long before those administering them and keeping court will be doing things that are not lawful. But as long as they're public, and our Constitution of the United States guarantees public trials, therefore, they must be oral. That means spoken, not primarily written, or you file motions and all. But you must have an opportunity to be heard, because if trials are only in writing, as they are in most of the world, they can't be public. Documents are sealed. And hearing is something everybody can do. It's something everybody can do. Reading is not something everybody can do. And it's not something everybody can do well. And that's no slam against anybody's intelligence. It's just that some people have spent their lives trying to discipline themselves to such things as reading, writing, And other people have disciplined their lives to many other things that are just as important, if not more so. But because hearing is the way of the truth, God himself has ordained the truth to be accessible to all persons, is through hearing. He says faith comes by hearing. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Be quick to hear, slow to speak, says the on and on. That's enough for to make the point. But an oral trial is a public trial, and the public trial is an oral trial when people are kept out of a courthouse for whatever reason because of the fear of judges. If judges are that afraid, they should arm themselves. And then they're afraid of guns. A lot of them are. And I know that's rough, I know. But freedom is more important than, put it this way, freedom is dangerous. But the alternative is unthinkable and hellish. Which do we want? Well, when a central distant power enables, or hinders rather, local government, people must conduct local courts using the jury. And by setting up common law courts at more local levels, America will have that which Blackstone cites as the peculiar strength of the early Anglo-Saxons. Jurors as judges impaneled at every level and locality, from the manor court to the village neighborhood, to the hundred court, to the countryside, to the shire moats, that is, the old county courts, and royal courts. And by these, says William Blackstone, courts were handy, close by every cottage. And so also today, and I'll end with this, Americans must impanel the jury in their church assemblies, in their townships, in their villages, in their cities, in their water districts, in their irrigation districts, their mining districts. Nevada still has mining districts. And they must do so in order to keep courts accessible. How can our children learn how God wants us to resolve our disputes if courts aren't accessible and if they as children don't witness these things? I took my children to court in a murder trial once. And the defense counsel, a big city lawyer, called in to defend a strong arm for a local labor union across the river, across the Wabash on the other side. It's a murder trial. His lawyer called in from the big city, tried to have me and my children thrown out of court. It was a small county, in a small town of about 3,000 people. And I remember Judge Anderson looked up from his papers before the trial, looked at me and looked at my children and said out loud, as long as they're not causing disturbance, they can stay here as long as they want. That's the way it ought to be. But without a lot of courts and a lot of judges to man them and a lot of juries being impaneled at every level, our children won't learn. We're talking about liberty, and freedom is about ensuring the future, not about like these despicables. They're trying to tear down statues of war heroes. They want to destroy a memory of the past. That's what they want to do. That's all they want to do. They want vengeance and destruction of the past. Destruction of history. You don't agree with Robert E. Lee? Well, he's part of our history, and they've got a statue to him. But these folk are like the emperors of Egypt, the pharaohs, that when they come into power, they would wipe out every mention of the former regime. That's what Russia did during the revolution, 1917. After that, they said, we're wiping out everything in the past. We're even starting a new calendar. The world and time begins right now, 1917, October, and no mention was ever allowed to be made of anything that happened in the past or any person or the czars. You couldn't even bring up their name. Same thing is true in China. That's what the evil empire does. That's what the law of the city does, and that's what these useful idiots of the evil empire are trying to do. They want to obliterate any mention of our past history, good or bad. God makes it clear that history is for a reading. That's why when you read the Bible, you don't see the glorification of Israel. You don't see the glorification of man. Oh, you see some of the good things they do. But men don't write books like that. It tells all the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. It is our history. And it's written, says the Newer Testament, for our learning. And all of the things about our past are here for our learning. And if we are not able to access that If our children are not able to access local courts, we will forget our tradition of freedom. No question about it. So it's up to us to do that. Well, that's enough for this evening, John or Gerard, whoever's there. Back to you. Thanks a lot for letting me talk.
Thank you very much, Brent. All right, I'm going to leave you unmuted. If anybody's got a question for Brent, you can come right back in. I think we got Ollie up next. Let me just unmute him. Are you there, Ollie? Hello, hello.
Yeah, this is actually Jeremiah.
Oh, it said Ollie. What are you? You got an Ollie mask on. Go ahead.
How's that possible? That's so strange.
Look, I'm just happy to be here. It took me all night to get in here. All right.
Well, this is good timing. I have a minute to for dialogue, and I'm glad you unmuted me. I've been listening to the call. I wanted to mention, well, first of all, I know that Brent earlier mentioned the township construct, and I thought that that was of supreme importance for people to take note of, because that is a fixture of common law that is present today in our very structure of every legal system. Even New Jersey actually has active township right now. Although they're scarce in their appearance, the head of the household and family typically ends up being the leader, you know, in communities where that's hence you know we get families that sign up with homeowners associations and things of that nature, and then of course those organizations are organized underneath the state laws, right? But again, that's all de facto. So I guess I'm gonna steer my question towards militia and towards a recognition of the Posse Comitatus Act, which forbids the military from policing on state grounds, on state property, and the township as a form of government, okay, and whereby we would be able to recapture the enforcement power that everyone has been so adamant about claiming that doesn't exist. There's no, where's our enforcement power? Many people are doing many different claims in the courts, as well as other different remedies that seem to be treating the system of things and its symptoms. But I believe, as well as other very scholarly people on the call, would probably confirm and also get a consensus with me on that local formation in the form of townships is something that's totally doable right now. Not only for purposes of installing again the pure form of common law, but also to be able to redraw district maps. There's so many different things, you know, that could come from a reorganization of the political body. But I suppose the biggest question, I mean, the big thing to remember is that when you have like the national organizations that represent larger body politics, it's important to remember who they are protecting. And that's why I thought it was kind of important to remember that territorial jurisdiction is also of extreme importance to take note of. If you wanted to start a township, Brent, or Gerard, or John, out in your area, and you were one of 3 or 10 people that formed a township, you know, you could literally basically exercise common law within the jurisdiction of that precinct, okay, whatever that, let's say you have a de facto precinct map, right, and you guys are have major public claim for establishing head of household. Well, not only would you be able to establish a common law jurisdiction for yourselves and your families, but everybody else that's also located in the territory of the jurisdiction. And that's why territorial jurisdiction is kind of an important point to bring up, because as we begin to establish our common law jurisdictions, it's important to remember that not everybody that has the knowledge of the law has to actually have that knowledge in order to be protected by the common law community members. And on that point, I will yield. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, you know, Brent said we should form, you know, local things, and that whole committee of safety idea is built on that. That's how you start, because that's the people assembling in their communities and discussing these things, and then taking local action outside of the accepted norms of government. But your right to assembly is in there. All your constitutional rights are there. And so you get together with a group of people and you act. And that was the whole idea behind the Committee of Safety, because you can't look at, you go to these town halls, they got them locked down, they're running on their statutes, they're not going to let you in. That's the reason that you got to start your own and to begin with. And that's the whole idea behind the Committees of Safety. And the Committees of Safety have committees of correspondence. Our forefathers did this because they had to develop a system outside of the old English system that they were using here, which didn't have, really, it didn't have juries like we do. That's what set us apart from them. So we've already kind of addressed this. It's time for people to really understand and put it together and act on it, you know, and see how it develops. Because, you know, look, the power's in the people. If you get enough people together, there's actually laws on the books now, right now, that have been there that basically when you get to certain numbers, it gives you a certain authority. You know what I mean? A township, you know, they have numbers that say townships need to be X many people and all, and that they even accept. And so that's what we should be doing. We should be using those things to our advantage. But thank you for that, Jeremiah. I have somebody here with a 3002 who's next. I think you're unmuted. Go ahead.
Yes, I actually had sent an email before and I had a question. I don't know if I'm able to ask it, if it needs to be specific to your comment, but one is with regard to a false traffic ticket in which I filed using common law jurisdiction, special appearance, and it's just a bogus charge, period. And the sheriff was involved, meaning that night there were like five or six officers, and I called 911 that I was going to pull over. I was traveling at night alone as a female, and I've experienced police brutality before. So at any rate, the sheriff, when I was finally able to talk with him, he then asked to speak back to the deputies, and there was, I had been threatened. They threatened to pull me out of the car, bust the window, impound the car, all of these things. And I had somebody else on the phone. I had filed motion to dismiss or no demand to dismiss, to strike. They haven't stated a claim. There's no injured party. I filed a notice of abatement and even submitted an authenticated birth certificate. They're in administrative default. It's just ridiculous. And the last time I went to court, it was someone I'd gone to college with sitting on the bench that day. And so she recused herself. The previous time I'd gone, I moved for a continuance. And the judge put me in jail because I moved for a continuance.
Well, look, That's why all that other stuff you did doesn't work, because they don't listen to it. That's the problem. What did they end up charging you with? What was it, what were the actual charges at the end of the day?
They gave me two tickets. Each had two charges on it. One was no North Carolina driver's license. I am a legal inhabitant, or my legal domicile is in Atlanta, Georgia. Our home place is in North Carolina, and I was traveling here because I had an appointment the next day. I was going to church that evening and had an appointment where I needed to file documentation in Greensboro on that Monday. I don't even have a North Carolina driver's license. They're putting the charge on a North Carolina driver's license. I lived in Atlanta since 97, and prior to that I lived in Boston. So that is a bogus number, obviously. The other thing was, Phil, he alleged I crossed the yellow line. On that particular highway, on number one, it is not possible. Myself and several other people have traveled along that highway to see how it could even merely be possible. It's not even possible. The other thing on the other ticket he charged with was failed to stop the blue light or siren. And the other was, what was the other charge? Oh, I asked, was there a crime? He said no. And then he said, oh, now we have a crime, resist, obstruct, and delay. So he charged me with resisting officer.
Well, look, his probable cause is bad because the reason he's claimed he pulled you over is for crossing the yellow line. So if he can't prove that, then he had no probable cause to get you into all the other stuff that he did.
Correct.
Look, the resisting arrest was only after the fact of the stop. So why did you stop you in the first place? Well, because you crossed the yellow line, and then you didn't comply, and then it goes deeper and deeper. And these things have a way of getting real ugly. That's why we don't get into fighting them, because they just go on forever and ever. And you got these judges, like Thornton says, there's nothing so frightful as ignorance in action. They don't mind putting you in jail anytime, and especially if you start to get the upper hand, they'll even throw you in jail quicker. If you start getting what looks like you're going to win, I mean, I don't know. They don't ever want to give you a jury. They want to take care of this in the back room. That's really what they want to do. I mean, even the charges you have now, I'll bet you that they would plea bargain them away. And you could get out of it for a couple hundred bucks, unless you want to fight it on a matter of principle. But you're going to be years down the road with these idiots, And I don't know if you'll ever get in front of a jury. You'll probably want to move it out of that court. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you, because it gets so tangled and ugly, and to unravel it is like, and if you got one of those officials mad at you, they're working behind the scenes against you, and you're going into their courts looking for mercy. Just like St. Paul said, why do you go looking for justice in their courts? Because they won't give it to you. And so,
my question is, what can you do? Like the judge that was there, not this last time, but prior, he in public court. I mean, the judge has been horrible. They have been horrible. This judge in open court stated that I was banned from filing any further documents. He told the clerks that if I file any documents, not to accept them, and if they did accept them, they could just throw them in the trash.
That's treason right there. he locked you out of the court on his own say so, and with no jury of your peers, he's violating he's taking away your due process rights.
Right.
He doesn't have that authority, and then you got to sit down and write an affidavit and a paper for that, and you go on and on and on and on. Look, as far as the traffic stuff goes, the best scenario that I have seen is that retired police officer, I think it's Eddie Craig, and he gives you, he has you learn a dialogue when the cop pulls you over. And and what you do is you stick to that dialogue exactly as it is. You learn it by heart, preferably, but you can read it from the paper. And if you follow that dialogue, then when you get into court, there's another dialogue that hooks into that. And if you follow his dialogue at the car, they never gain jurisdiction over you, because by the questions that, by the answers that you give and the questions that you ask and they ask, they basically hang themselves, and you get the prosecutor in there on the stand, and they're in a horn dilemma. If you get that far, and they'll usually back off, because at that point, they don't have anything, and they know they don't have anything. And it works out really well if you follow the script. But you see, on yours, they got there. He said, she said, and did she resist? Oh, she crossed the yellow line. No, she didn't cross the yellow line. You really got to have everything kind of keyhole, and it's good to. And he even tells you, he says, you want to record it and videotape it if you can. But at the very least, you should audio record it, because ultimately, at the end of the day, where's your justice going to come from? To come from your peers, from your people. And just like Brent said, even though the system's broke, if you get 12 jurors, chances are you're going to get somebody there going, what the heck is going on here? And they're going to stand up for you. That's your only chance. You can't beg them for mercy. They're not going to give it to you. We've been looking for a good person in the courts, and we have not found one in well over 5-6 years. I don't know. I don't. There may be some, but I dang sure have never run into them. And everybody that comes on this show has got one horror story after the other, so they haven't run into them. So you have to think about this whole thing as far as laying out in front of a jury of your peers. And it's not easy. It takes time and it takes effort. And that's why, like for me, I got a business to run. I got all this other stuff. I can't fight them like that. I just have to plea bargain it and pay the fine, and think about going after them, when things change. You have to pick your battles. That's the best thing I can tell you. Because this traffic court stuff, they think they're right, and they're breaking the law and violating your rights. And, eventually they will answer. But when that's going to be, I don't know. You know what I mean? Mark Twain, Samuel Clemens, had a saying, and I like it a lot, and he said, it ain't what you don't know that gets you. He says, it's what you think you know that ain't so that gets you. And that's a pretty good, saying there as far as these officers and these judges and even yourself about, entering into dialogue and contract with them, So, you sit down with the devil and make a deal, and guess what? I can almost guarantee you're going to get the short end of the stick. You know what I mean? So I wish I could tell you something better than that, but that's my opinion anyway. I don't know if anybody else has a better opinion, but for me, I try to avoid that because it takes so much time. And look, at any one of these courts can throw you in jail. I mean, technically, that court there doesn't really have the power to confined, but they do. I used to be on a town board, and they would send books in, and they would say how to keep misdemeanors and felonies in your town and make money off of them, because technically that court doesn't have the authority to try those, but they do, and they send the judges and the council people of the town these little nasty methods to get people to plea bargain in the town, to scare them, to bully them, to waive their rights so the town could collect the money and the judge can collect the money and the court collect the money. Now, this is your tax dollars at work on a monthly publication called the Association of Towns. I'm calling them out here, telling them how to keep these things in the town instead of sending them up to the Supreme Court, to the county where they belong, because they're a serious crime that where you can lose your rights, and that requires everything that the Constitution says that it requires, such as a grand jury and a jury of your peers. And that's not what's happening in those little measly priest courts. That judge is banging his gavel. There ain't no jury there. And you hardly ever see a jury because they don't want to work that hard for their money. Or, you know what I mean? They won't make money in those little towns. Mm-hmm. Look, they got to pay every juror $40 a day, you know, on some baloney charge that they got you from. And then if you, you know, they're losing money when you go fight them like that. Anyway, I don't know what else to say, you know what I mean, for whatever it's worth, okay?
So in terms of holding the judges accountable for their actions, is it just through the Judicial Commission or is anything else could be done?
Well, look, I had a guy come on here and he said you can file a complaint on the judges. They do have a judicial complaint department. And I said, what's that do? That's a panel of other judges. And he said, well, it does make a difference. Look, they're out there. They're playing politics. If there's a judge that gets too many of those things, they will go after him because they understand that they got to have a certain appearance of justice. And every now and then you get one of these tyrants that gets out of hand, and that's all they're there for, to give them the appearance of control. So I'm not – look, it doesn't – always not to pay to file one. The judge himself doesn't want you filing it because in a certain way it does put a mark on him, and if he starts getting too many of them, he can get in hot water. That, you know, eventually they'll take notice. The bar will take notice, or whoever that panel of judges is will take notice. And you look at if they think that he's so out of hand that he's going to get in the way of their gravy train, but let me tell you what, they'll whack him down like a whack-a-mole really quickly. So I'm not telling you don't file it, but I'm telling you don't hold your breath for results, okay?
Okay, have you seen any success, like, in terms of people filing a contested hearing with the Office of Administrative Hearings?
Well, I don't know that much about it, but, you know, I haven't seen it, but I'm not saying there isn't because I'm not that familiar. I know that there's lots of successes in traffic court, you know, because you get to a certain point and you know, if you file enough paperwork that they can't answer, and most of the time they don't want to answer it, so they're defaulted, and then you file the default, they seem to peter out really quickly because it's really not worth their time and effort. And eventually, if you're local in the town, and you make yourself like a porcupine, the word will get out, don't mess with her. She's more trouble than she's worth. She's going to file paperwork. She's going to try to sue you. Don't write her anything that brings her into court. I've heard that happen in towns where they tell the cops, leave this person alone because they're too much trouble. And maybe, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
That's the best advice I can give you, you know?
So, okay, I have one other question, and I did send a note. I received a reply from John to ask the question. This is regarding an attempted foreclosure action where it involves Nation Star, but it's actually an attorney and attorneys that are acting as substitute trustees that are trying to go forward with the action. They failed to give notice. It's in a different county. It's in North Carolina, but a different county. The note is not in my name or my brother's name, although I didn't receive notice and I didn't receive service. And the judge had given them authority to go forward. They've never validated the debt. They didn't have the right to enforcement. They've not produced any original documentation. I've challenged the assignment because the date of the alleged assignment and when they executed and recorded it is like 3.5 years apart.
Yeah.
I ended up having to file a bankruptcy. The bankruptcy court made errors. They even alleged that there wasn't a claim file. It was invalid with another attorney from Florida. So totally different state, and they're not registered with the Secretary of State. Then a totally different attorney came back into the state court. The judge in the bankruptcy court lifted the stay, not requiring them to produce the original security instrument per Rule 3001D and a whole lot of other evidentiary rules that they did not comply with. And they went to the clerk although this had already been appealed to the Superior Court de novo, and from the Superior Court for lack of notice, it had also been appealed. They went to the clerk, had an ex parte hearing, which I knew nothing about.
Sounds wonderful. You know, look at it. There's a lot of stuff there, and basically, to boil it down, I would say you're not going to get justice from these people because these are issues that need to go up to the Supreme Court. The state court can't be the judge, jury, and executioner, and that's exactly what they're doing. You know what I mean? They're violating your rights here, there, and everywhere. You know, mm-hmm. you have things that aren't filled out, and the state judges aren't going to go against people in the state or the county. They're going to stick together. So, I mean, technically, I think that it needs to go up to a higher court that's not so connected with all that baloney, and that will take the constitutional issues into consideration as opposed to all this statutory stuff that they're doing. What they're doing is just pushing statutes forward, that's all. Because they have paperwork they can fill out, and it looks good, and it looks official, and they keep going. But, you know, you're the burr under the saddle that slows them down by filing this paperwork on every step they do, and that's important that you document all this. You document, because what you're doing is you're building your federal case, you know, uh-huh. and then you go in and you sue them in the federal court for the violation of your unalienable rights and whatever else. I mean, I don't, you know, there's attorneys out there that would do a discrimination lawsuit on something like this, you know, and they'd figure it out, you know, 14th Amendment, blah, blah, blah. But you don't need that. All you need to do is document what you're doing, file it in the federal court. A lot of times that's enough. Once it's filed in the federal court, a lot of times they'll settle and just they'll cut and run because they don't want to bother with it, you know. I don't know. I don't know what else to tell you. It's a sticky mess. We got lots of people here that were trying to fill paperwork out and get our case into court to ultimately get redress on these things that we've documented like they're defaults and stuff in the paperwork. And it sounds to me like you got plenty.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they lack standing. There's no jurisdiction. They've not produced any chain of title. There's evidence of movement, clearly, securitization, even during the bankruptcy, apparently. And I have documentation from NationStar stating that they are the servicer and saying somebody else is the note holder. There's a torturous interference where they sent a letter to my homeowner's insurance and had my homeowner's insurance canceled, alleging that there had been a foreclosure that had not taken place.
These are all great lawsuits.
Yeah.
Isn't that worth like $1 million?
It would seem.
You know, I think you need to pick one.
Okay. Yes, file. Okay.
But you know, I lost my train of thought there. Oh, I know what I was going to say. Look, in these courts that you're dealing with, their mm-hmm. biggest bread business right now is exactly what you're going through. They're taking people's property. They're doing bankruptcies day in and day out. So when you come in there and you stick a stick, a monkey wrench in their works, they don't want to let you prevail because you're a bad example. Other people are going to get the idea and go, hey, I want to do what she's doing. See, they don't want you to win because that's what they're doing to make money. It's nothing personal on you. It's that they don't want you to break down that system that nobody's watching, that they're breaking the law in every day. And that's why you're having a problem, because you're into their honeypot, and they don't want it, and they can't have anybody prevail there, because if you prevail, it's going to set a precedent, and then everybody's going to do it. And that's why they never want to put you in front of a jury. You know, you'll probably never get in front of a jury, even if you have a federal case, because what's going to happen is when that threat comes, they'll come in and settle because it's not worth it to them to let you win. You know, and you got to do a good case where you have a good wherefore clause and that you want and that you get good money. That, you know, I don't know, you know, how you write that case. You know, that's up to you as far as the situations and the documentation you have. Anyway, I hope that helps. I don't know. I know it's kind of like very superficial, but it's basically, I think, where you're at.
Well, part of my thing is obviously I've been learning, absorbing, and applying as I've gone along. So I most definitely know more now today than I knew 4 years ago. But I just, you know, just kind of proceeding along to make sure that I'm on track. And I mean, I've been trying to stick with the documentation, and I will have to say I've gotten better at it. But maybe there's documentation, or I don't know if you guys have any samples of anything that I could take a look at on the site. I am a member, or I do give a donation monthly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, we do have the cases that, you know, there is paperwork on the foreclosure cases and things like that. And you know what? We stick to common law. So once you get it, it has the same theme that runs through it, and it's a due process. And that's where
okay.
we want to stick. The due process, and you know, I don't remember what law they were trying to make, but Scalia said, we don't need that law because the people have their redress under due process. He held a lot of, credibility towards due process. And if you think about it, everything they do is violating your due process. And so keep it simple, stupid, you know what I mean? It's like the fundamental rights are easier to defend and easy to think about and easy to articulate because they make sense. And you break away from their statutes. I think you got a couple of really good cases there. And you can't look at, if you try to go after all of them, you'll go crazy. Pick the best one. And once you win one, they're going to leave you alone on everything else. Believe me, they'll run like rats from a sinking ship. So figure out which one you have the most documentation, the most evidence, and then move it forward, planning to go into the federal court and see how you do. That's what I would do if it was me. But, you know, I don't pretend to know anything more than anybody else does. I mean, I other than, you know, my school of hard knocks in the courts. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So this is maybe a good question, but would I make a demand for removal from the state court to?
Well, you remove it to the federal court for cause.
Okay.
And if you look at our, we have that. If you go into the case that we have, that's exactly what we did. It says removal for cause. You'll see it in the docket, and you'll see it in the sample court cases we have, on the site. Go into grand jury and go into docket and read our main case and read the sample court cases, and you'll get it. I mean, you could use the same format and language. Just you got to turn it to yourself away from the grand jury, but it's all there. You'll make sense out of it. You're intelligent enough, you're going to understand it when you read it. I can tell.
Okay. And then on the prior thing, I think the guy you said was Eddie Craig. Is it Eddie Craig?
Yeah, I like Eddie Craig, and I like what he's doing because it's a methodology, and he has a plan, and it seems to work. I think he has like a 98 percentile success rate of, you know, when people follow his plan, it usually works pretty good. And it takes a little bit of learning and getting used to it, but it's not difficult at all.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome. Have a good night.
Mm-hmm, you too.
Let's see. Who do we have next here? Is that the end of the queue? I can't read this stupid thing. We got Brent. Hey, Jan, is there anybody? I can't make this queue out. Are we out of people in the queue, or are these last three down here?
There's three people in the queue yet.
Well, I hit next, and it didn't do anything.
Well, it brought Brent up. Do you want to kick it again, and you'll get another one?
Okay, so Brent was sitting in there. Okay. There we go. See, I'm not used to this thing yet. I got you now. Okay. I don't know who that is there. Tell me your name and your state.
This is Barrett from North Carolina.
Hey, how you doing, Barrett?
Is Brent still with us?
He's there.
I was wanting to ask him about citizenship status, your legal status.
Brent, are you still with us? Or did I unmute him when I kicked him out of the queue?
Yeah, I unmuted him. he's still here.
I'm sure if he can hear me.
Okay, go ahead. Brent's listening, so ask him your question. Go right ahead.
My question is about our legal status. As for our citizenship, as a state national versus a United States citizen, does that have any bearing on anything?
Well, sure, it does, because fundamentally it's axiomatic, it's undeniable, that a fellow can't be citizen of the United States unless he's first a citizen of the state wherein he resides. In other words, federal citizenship, if there is such a thing, is a function of state citizenship, not the other way around. But I hasten to add that for the last 130 years or more, the federal government has not looked at it that way. And they've even carved out in our country the idea that there's such a thing as a federal citizenship without regard to state citizenship. I tell this story, just not a story, just something that happened to me, to make the point. Not many years ago, I went to vote. I'd moved. And I moved back to my home county, and I went to vote, and I realized I wasn't registered. So I went back to the place where I lived before in a neighboring county and said, can I still vote here? I explained what the situation was, and they looked and said, no, your name's not here anymore. But I'll tell you what, said the lady, I can give you a federal ballot, and you can vote for federal officers even though you don't live here. Federal offices, I should say, people running for federal offices. She gave me a special ballot for people only voting for federal offices who were not residents of the state, not even a resident of that voting district, that voting precinct. Now, that is absolute ridiculousness that they would allow me to do that. But that's what they told me they could do. And what, of course, the federal government is doing, and they've been doing it again since the Civil War, the uncivil war, the war, as they say, some people, between the states. They say now that that war abolished the whole idea of state citizenship, and state citizenship being necessary before there was such a thing as being a United States citizen, as folk put it. And so it's in confusion at this point. And probably will remain so because our constitutions didn't understand it that way. And it's a matter of trying to do away with the whole idea of local government, with state government, and trying to make the centralization of all government power in Washington, D.C. by saying that you can be a citizen of the United States without being a state citizen. But to put more color in the history of the problem, it all happened after the war between the northern and the southern tiers of states. Then there were many freedmen, some people say anywhere from 250,000 to 500,000 ex-slaves. And some of the states in the South, after the Reconstruction, the occupation of federal troops and all that, the states would not allow the freed slave the same status as a white citizen. And that went on, by the way, unaddressed until about 1960, or maybe a little earlier, 1950. And at that time, then, the whole idea came up again, and the federal government began the push that they had left off since the days of Reconstruction after the war between the northern and the southern tiers of states. They went back in and tried to say there is no such thing as state citizenship. You're a citizen of the United States, you're nothing. And the madness has continued. But it is fundamental to what lawyers call the concepts of federalism. I don't like that word, but what federalism is, that means federalism is our Constitution's balance of power between each of the sovereign states and the sister states. And then the general government, that's what they used to call it. They didn't call it the federal government before the war. They called it the general government in Washington, D.C. And there are certain doctrines or teachings of our Constitution that govern that relationship. Go ahead.
1989, Bill Clinton? Bill Clinton, Executive Order 13, 13132, Federalism, allowed the people of states the right to determine their own legal status.
I don't.
Which means there are different legal statuses.
Uh-huh. Well, that's axiomatic that ought to be the case. It always has been the case. It's not the prerogative of the general government to make that decision. It's the prerogative of the states according to our Constitution has always been understood. In other words, my status as a man or a woman's status as a woman and what their status is before the law is a matter of state law. Who gets to vote for president, for federal offices? Well, that's a matter of state government to decide. Are felons allowed to vote in every state according for offices of the federal government? Well, that's a state question. And the states have made different decisions. So we still have a vestige, I like to say, of the machinery of our Constitution, which is the machinery of our common law. The principles of it are still with us. And by the way, I heard someone say a while ago, I know we're in a habit of talking this way. I know that no harm was meant by what was said. But I pick up on words. I believe words are of the utmost importance. We don't need to be saying things like, Can a person be a part of a militia? That's false. That's a false way to talk. Every man is a part of a militia, whether he likes it or not. And there's nothing he can do to change that as a matter of law. That's our common law. Another phrase that we use that really isn't accurate, we shouldn't say it, well, this is not common law jurisdiction. No, there is no such thing in this world as any jurisdiction that is not under our common law. Now, that doesn't mean that they're practicing it. That doesn't mean that they're observing it. But it means that our common law is applicable to all men at all times in all places, on every continent and in every age. It is the law that is common to the race of Adam. Applicable because it is, as our Declaration of 76 puts it is the law of nature, unwritten in the nature of things. And what God has shown us through creation that will not change is applicable to every man and every woman and every child, everywhere, at all times. So there is no such place on the faces of our planet where our common law doesn't apply. No, it applies everywhere. It's just that there are some men that recognize that, and many more others that don't recognize the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God. But just because they don't recognize them does not mean that God will not put his consequences right on them if they violate it. Well, anyway, back to you. Did you want to say something else?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, U.S. Code, Title 8, Section 1408, is a national, which is a state citizen, not a federal United States citizen.
Yes, and to add the confusion, they used the words of James Otis, a very famous, not famous anymore, I don't suppose, but a well-known and important lawyer in our colonial days. He said, ignorant clerks push bureaucratic law to the extremity. And when federal officers say, are you a United States citizen? That's just an ignorant clerk doing what he's told to do. He doesn't have a clue what he's saying. But if you don't say the words he wants you to say, he'll probably arrest you. So, but we must keep that in mind. There's a difference between authority and power, and the federal agent's gun is his power. His badge is the sign of his authority, and he uses his gun in the ways that his authority doesn't give him jurisdiction to do, often, as do many police officers. That's nothing unusual. That's why we're in the courts with defending people, like the Bundys, and all of the people that are being tried with them. That is where federal agents exceeded their jurisdiction of authority and exercise raw force outside of authority. Go ahead.
Yeah, but the way I understand it, it's governed by consent.
Yeah.
Okay, the statutes and codes are nothing but rules. They only apply to government entities. They don't apply to the people. The statutes and codes don't, unless you give your consent.
Well, the consent is given traditionally at common law. Consent, statutes, and codes and their application is given in individual instances to the verdict of the jury. That's the way we've done it for centuries. The consent to try a person for a crime is given, that decision is given to the grand jury. Yes, the grand jury says yes, you may try this person for this crime, or no, Mr. Government, you may not. And then the trial jury is our consent. And it is not a representative. The jury does not represent us. The legislator represents us. He seeks his office. He wants his office. The juror, more often than not, doesn't even want the job and is mad if he can't get out of jury duty. We like that. That's good. But he is not a representative. The juror is a representative sampling of the people of the United States. Much different.
Correct.
And so we depend upon them. We have found that jurors, the jury, it's not a majority institution. Not the grand jury isn't either, by the way. That's a misnomer. The grand jury always requires 12. If there are 12 members of the grand jury, it requires 12 to indict. If there are 18 members of the grand jury, it requires 12 to indict. If there are 24 members of the grand jury, it requires 12 to indict. Our grand jury is not a majority-based institution, as neither is our trial jury. And in all those cases, it is the number 12 that is significant and has been since the days we know for sure that Jesus Christ impaneled the jury of 12 to be witnesses to the evidence of his deity and his messiahship. And even before that, go ahead.
I've put this challenge out to anyone that I've talked to about this, and they've not been able to answer me. Show me in either a state constitution or the federal constitution where the government has the authority to legislate to the people. They cannot. I can show you strictly in North Carolina Constitution, they can only legislate the government unit.
Well, I know that it doesn't work that way, although you may have some authority that says otherwise, but it's my conclusion that the custom in our country and the custom in England before us and the custom in pre-Norman England when the Wittenagemot, which was their meeting of the white-headed men, the elders, analogous to the House of Lords and the House of Commons, when they did what they did, they petitioned the king. They got together and they said, well, here's what we think the standard ought to be, and they would have someone draw it up, and they would petition the king. And that let the legislature, as we'd call it today, petitioning the executive branch, the executive branch, is the arisal of our right and freedom of petition. And then if the king at that time would sign off on their petition, it became law. It became something that was enforceable. And today we've sophisticated that process quite a bit. But when our Congress sends bills to the president to sign, what they're sending is a petition as our representatives. Now, does that apply to us? Well, our juries have even agreed, by the way, over the years, that applies to us in many cases. They say yes. This statute is viable. For example, if a statute is passed reinforcing the crime our Constitution calls treason, juries have recognized that. And many other crimes that fall within the four categories of crimes that our Constitution cites, treason against the United States, of course, counterfeiting the current coin and securities of the United States, piracies and felonies committed on the high seas, and violations of international law. Those are the four crimes, the areas of crimes that the federal government has jurisdiction, the right, to pass legislation concerning. Anything outside of that, they have no right. And they're doing it, by the way. They've long since left those four categories. Those, they have no jurisdiction to pass legislation concerning. That's my conclusion. I'm not quarreling with you about it. I'm just giving you my conclusion on the subject. And our juries,
I'd like to talk to you a lot further on this. I mean, the way I understand it, a state citizen owes allegiance to his state, which is the land and the people.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And the law of the land. That means
the law of nature, and the law of nature is God.
Uh-huh.
Okay. In our Declaration of 1776, that's our laws. Laws of nature and the law of God. Nature's God.
Nature's God,
That's our laws.
Uh-huh.
If I don't give my consent to man's law, it does not apply to me.
Well, but then a fellow has to ask himself, what is the laws of nature and what are the laws of nature's gods. There are two volumes there of which he speaks. And those two volumes of law are delineate themselves into detailing many things. And all men, you and I, and all the congressmen, and all the presidents, and all the state legislators, everybody is bound by the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God. And if we violate those, we will suffer the consequences. But the question comes, what are they? The laws of nature's God, Blackstone tells us, following John Locke. John Locke is following the expressions of the Scottish Enlightenment, and the Scottish Enlightenment, but just observing what is true. Here's what Blackstone said in his commentaries. He is correct, and he summed up our history on the subject. He said, the laws of nature of the first volume of God's revelation, our Maker's revelation, revealing of his will to his creature, man. It is the law unwritten, the lex non scripta. Then the second
lex
volume...
Scriptus.
Pardon?
Lex non scripta?
Lex non scripta. Lex non scripta. And then the second volume, says Blackstone, has always been understood to be the law written, the lex scripta, which is the Bible. The laws of nature are the laws unwritten in the nature of things, in the nature of God's creation, the way he has set things up. And the laws of nature's God are the Bible, period. And anything that's outside of those two, that is contrary to those two, is no law at all, just a lie. That's what William Blackstone said. That's what John Locke said. And that's what many other men have said of great note and great intelligence that aren't quite as famous. I can read it in the case law of England. I can read it in the case law of the United States. But what I wanted to get at was every man is responsible to do and speak according to the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God. And our legislators in Congress, when they pass legislation, their legislation, if it's not within the ambient and in support of the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God, and those two are mutually supportive, then it's no law at all. It's unconstitutional. It's not part of our common law. What is our common law? Our common law is substantially that first volume, the laws of nature, unwritten in nature of things. And our common law courts, our juries, observe the application of those first principles. And they say, yes, this application the government's trying to use here is right. Or yes, they would say in a non-criminal case, yes, this person is right, and he can now invoke force of the government to force this other person to perform his contract or to pay his debt. These are the laws of nature, the laws of nature of God, and our courts are designed to recognize the law not writ, the lex non scripta. That's what our common law is. When our judges deliver opinions, they're responsible before God to say what they say and support their conclusions using the laws of nature, the laws of nature's God. And I just went through, this is just a drop of footnote here, because I dropped a whole lot of footnotes over the last year and in the Common Lawyer's Bible, and cited all the places that our courts, since about 1925 up through about 1995, all the places our state and federal courts have cited the Bible in support of what they've decided. I was overwhelmed. I have well over 500 observances of that in there that I found, and I'm satisfied I haven't found them all. But I was surprised because I've been in court and filed papers before, and I remember one time I dropped a footnote trying to get rid of the other attorney because he was conflicted in the case. It was in a federal court, a federal district court. I dropped a footnote, and I said, this guy's conflicted. He's got two clients, and his two clients are contrary to one another. And no man, I dropped a footnote and said, just as Jesus Christ put it, no man can serve two masters, and I put there where he said that. Well, I had taken that quote, of course that's out of the Bible, but I had a treatise by a lawyer's lawyer on the subject, and that's the way he begins his fat treatise of about 1,000 pages. It's an ancient principle that no man can serve two masters. And no lawyer can serve two clients that are fighting with one another. That's ridiculous. And we have laws against that, and our ethics code is against it. But every one of us, to come back full circle, every one of us is responsible. And if you're a congressman, the laws you pass are to be in conformity with the first principles the laws of nature. The laws of nature is God, and sometimes our legislators have done that. The Habeas Corpus Act, for example, is an observance by our legislature of the laws of nature, and the laws of nature is God. It's been a good one, and it's served us well. In every state, almost every state, has their own version of the Habeas Corpus Act, which the Parliament of England passed way back in the 17th century. And it was a good application of a common law principle going clear back to the first chapter of the Bible, when God said to our grandpa, Adam, he said, I want you to be fruitful, multiply, and scatter over the faces of the land. Well, you can't do that if you're falsely imprisoned. And that's why the Habeas Corpus Act was passed, for that reason, in the upholding of the covenant, the most fundamental covenant of our Maker with us. And that's what, by the way, it all comes back to. You talk about the laws of nature and the laws of nature of God. It all comes back to that fundamental trust settlement God made with his creature, man. Well, back to you, Gerard, or if you want to make another comment.
Well, look at it's already 12:15. I want to shut it down. Look, it was a good discussion, and we could pick up too because it laid to light a lot of the issues that we come in here from time to time between state citizen and national citizen. There's a lot of that going on, but you know what, Brent? If you keep it simple and keep it fundamental, it becomes very much more apparent where those lines need to be. And so, you know, it's like John says, don't give credibility to their fiction. And that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
It's the fiction. But anyway, thanks a lot for that. I appreciated it. I learned a lot myself. I hope everybody else did too. And we'll see everybody
State
back here.
Where it's at.
What's that?
State citizenship is where it's at.
Yeah, well, look at you don't. But you don't.
If you want to restore the republic, you must be a state citizen, not a United States citizen.
No, I understand that, but if you just follow the fundamental principles, then there you are, aren't you? Right.
Yep.
Okay. So we're no sense in arguing about what we're agreeing on. Okay.
If you want to restore the republic, you must be a state citizen,
right.
Not a United States.
Well, knowledge. Thank you very much.
All right. Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.